Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yes, it seems kind of quiet around here today. It's very unusual. I have one guest. I have a fabulous guest in the third hour, and that's second hour, Gregory Wrightstone. And then CJ is coming back in the third hour for our wellness. We've got Marco's already there in the Netherlands. He's got most plants would happily accept three times that. Yeah, CO2 440 parts per million. Yeah, the one of the things we'll talk about with Gregory Wrightstone is I want to get into the carbon cycle and how. You know, he talks about you know mid 1800s how the CO2 was like around 130 parts per million, which is dangerously low. It was 180, and 150 is like death. You get 150 parts per million carbon dioxide, we all drop dead because the plants can't sustain themselves. So you need at least 150 parts per million. We were 180 parts per million, which is only 30 parts per million away from death. And these wackos, these idiots, these nutcases keep talking about, we have to get rid of carbon dioxide. Great. You might as well just say, we just have to kill everybody. You know, it's like, Jim Jones in Guyana, you know, Jonestown. And it's like, no, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. You're taking away the air. Idiots, complete idiots. But it's fascinating to me that as a God believer and sort of, you know that there's when worse comes to worst, things are going to actually get fixed, that it was the advent of the Industrial Revolution, the internal combustion engine, the steam engine, the gasoline engine, you know, the engines that burned organic fuels. I never use the term muscle anymore, so if you don't hear me saying it, that's why. But organic fuels, oil, refined into gasoline, diesel, jet fuel eventually, all these different things, natural gas, even uranium is an organic fuel that comes from the earth. So it's organic. It's natural. We don't make it. We may enrich it, but we don't make it, you know, so it's down there. And it was fascinating to me. This is sort of a revelation I had thinking about this. Pianchi's on the line, too, so we've got Marco and Pianchi on live chat. And it was really interesting. This would be a good hour to call in. It's just me. I got some CO2 things to go over with the CO2 coalition, but it's just me, you know, until Greg is here in the next hour. But, I mean, the Industrial Revolution really saved us, and I never realized that until you understand that there was the carbon dioxide between glacial ages. I want to get him to explain it because it's a little bit complex. I'm not quite sure how the cycles work, but the thing is that the CO2 level is dropping dangerously low. You know, the dinosaurs were here, it's like 3,000 or 4,000 parts per million, and back in the Cambrian, you know, back in the one cell days, it was like 8,000 parts per million. You know, so we've CO2 is at its lowest. So the Earth is quite happy with a lot higher level of CO2 than we have now. The plants love it too. And so, you know, if it's 440 now, that's actually good. It probably should be around, 1,000, 2,000, somewhere in there, parts per million. You know, there's still plenty of oxygen, folks. You know, carbon dioxide right now is less than 0.5%. I'd probably feel better if carbon dioxide was around 1%. Because we've got 72% nitrogen, so that keeps the plants happy too. You got 22% oxygen, like 1% everything else. So I don't know how exactly it would. Maybe those aren't exact proportions, but you can look it up. Anyway, it's mostly nitrogen, and then oxygen, and then a little bit of everything else. This is kind of how the atmosphere breaks down. So that's kind of interesting as to how that all works. Anyway, the liberation of carbon from these organic materials that have been underground for millions of years, or in a lot of cases, it's like the ocean. The ocean absorbs a ton of, an amazing amount of CO2. I'm not sure how that works and how it comes out. They say hurricanes bring out CO2 from the ocean into the air. I don't know about that. Well, we'll find out. Yeah, maybe I'll put that down. Hurricanes. Let me do a little. I've got all these notes for. Let's go hurricanes and CO2. Hang on. This is a little live. I have to reach around my microphone to do this. Hurricanes. This E not a W, hurricanes and CO2. Question. There we go. Okay. So I got that taken care of. Well, like I say, I have these big lists. And it was funny when we had Christina Bob on Tuesday because we went through my whole question list, and that never happens. It never is a case. And she didn't have time because, you know, I would have had to kind of improvise at that point. Or we would have gone and extended some different things. But really, that was amazing. Anyway, so back to world history. So in the 1800s, you know, there was no electricity, there was no gasoline, there were no automobiles, you know, we were riding horses, and the oil source was whale oil. And that's what they used in the lamps, that's what they used to, you know, grease this and that, and whale oil, or probably animal fat. Anyway, so the whales were being killed, and in large numbers, you know, by harpoons, pretty barbaric. But anyway, petroleum basically saved the whales, because instead of using whale oil, we can now use oil. You know, we could use, you know, kerosene to light the lamps. And eventually we got electricity, and we use, you know, the organic fuels to run the generators, to power the electric lights, and away you go, modern society. But the thing is that we're putting a lot of CO2 and H2O. So the byproducts of burning hydrocarbons combined with oxygen in an internal combustion engine, and we've talked about this before a bunch of times, is carbon dioxide and water vapor. Well, water vapor makes clouds. Oh, boy. Not a problem. Although that is the greatest warming of the earth takes place under clouds. You know, look at a cold night that's clear and one that's cloudy. The cloudy night is warmer than the next day, right? Because, you know, the clouds kind of are like a little blanket over the earth. So the heat kind of gets trapped in. That's why deserts on clear nights can get very cold. Well, they get hot the next day, but the heat definitely dissipates, except in Phoenix, because it's all wrapped up in the tar and the concrete and everything else, which is why big cities and deserts is a really dumb idea. Vegas, Phoenix, some of these other places is really hot. Carson City, you know, Bonanza Town. Anyway, so where the intelligent design comes in is that at the lowest point in a relatively recent history of carbon dioxide is the point at which we discovered petroleum and made internal combustion engines and got the Industrial Revolution going, without which we would not be burning organic fuels. And, you know, life as we know it might have been over already, you know, because who knows when it would have disappeared. Anyway, I get to my live chat and get a bunch of things here. So Pianchi says, cored ice samples revealed that 100,000 years ago until present, there were times when CO2 and other elements were present in the air at different cycles. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything works in a cycle. I don't understand them all. The oceans have cycles. There are like, you know, 10-year, 20-year, 50-year, 100-year, 500-year ocean cycles. You know, the sun has cycles. The Earth rotation has cycles. The wobble has, I mean, it has a cycle, right? So Marco says in the Netherlands, we have Marcel Kroc from Clintel actively battling the climate disinformation. Oh, okay, so who's that? So Mark, is it Marcel Kroc? Marcel Kroc. Not sure who that is. Actually, that might be something I can look up right now. This is the fun thing about live radio. I got Marco in the Netherlands. I got Pianchi somewhere in the middle of the country. And I've got my CO2 coalition, which is actually what I was going to go over. But let's, I don't want to crowd my website with too many things. Let's just pop this window in here and see what Marco has for me. Amazing technology. So, CLINTEL. I guess that, yeah, there is no climate emergency. Okay, there we go. Okay, Nobel Prize winner, Dr. John Clauser. Oh, so, okay, there. Now, this is interesting because I heard Gregory Wrightstone, who's my guest, talking about Dr. John Clauser in the last, and he was on the TV. So that was one of the things I wanted to ask him about. Good call, Marco. Appreciate that. So I'll ask him about that. And we've got, actually, Pianchi looks like he's on the line. So let me bring him on and let's talk climate a little bit. There we go. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Pinglis. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine. Call me Greg. We know each other already. It's okay. This is an interesting topic.
No, yeah, it is. If you take the cored ice samples at the Antarctic, especially the South Pole, and you can drill down into the ice there is still awful thick.
Uh-huh.
And you can go back in time and pull it up, and you can read along that cored sample, the length of it, and you can see a period of times when you have different patterns. And when you sample those patterns, which is nothing more than an entrapment of the atmosphere at that time period, you can find that your CO2 levels was much higher than they are today, and there was no automobiles and industrial revolution.
Yeah, well, it's actually weird. It's not that there were no automobiles. I mean, I agree with you. Good analysis. But the thing was that automobiles are not the problem. They're actually the solution. You know, but my point is that because we are burning organic fuels, we are putting carbon dioxide back into the air that needs to be there. And I got a climate. I got a chart here. I'll from the Encyclopedia Britannica, and it's fascinating. And you look at this chart, and I'll talk about this with Gregory too. In fact, that's the perfect question to ask him. So I'll leave you on the line for that, and I'll bring you on live. You know,
and give you an example.
Yeah. Okay.
You ever use a compost?
I haven't personally.
You know, let me give you a brief description of some modern compost. Some modern compost are like tumbler drums, and they on a slant. So you put the material in on one end, and you add some carbon, which can be leaves better or grass, and then the compost will tumble, okay? And it would go, what you put in on one end, because of the slant, it would end up at the other end, pure compost. The dead animals or whatever is gone.
Right.
Now, you put in material that is organic. If dead animals are organic, it would go right from dust to dust, as the Bible says.
Yeah.
You don't put in broke glass. You don't put in steel particles. You don't put in bricks. You put in organic material. And that's exactly what happens when you run automobiles. You are burning organic fuels. And they go right back to the old cliche, from dust to dust.
Yeah. Well, it's, remember the comparison I do between hydrocarbons and carbohydrates. Hydrocarbons is, you know, petroleum. A hydrocarbon is what oil, you know, coal, all these things that the fuels, the organic fuels, except uranium, that's different. Anyway, but hydrocarbons, you know, are fuel. Gasoline goes into your carburetor or your fuel injectors. It's mixed with oxygen. So now you've got carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Well, they when you break the bonds, they release energy. The energy drives the car, and the byproducts, the waste products that result from the breaking of the hydrocarbon bonds mixed with oxygen is carbon dioxide and water vapor, H2O, H2O and CO2. Now, the problem was back in the 70s, for those of us, you know, 60s and 70s, who remember, you know, Chevy Impalas belching smoke and everything else, was that there was a lot of other stuff in there, too. There was nitrogen monoxide, sulfur monoxide, and they actually formed nitric acid and sulfuric acid. That's what acid rain was. So you had all these really awful things coming out the tailpipe, as well as carbon dioxide and oxygen. And so what the automakers have done with the catalytic converter and the other technology and their fuels and everything that they've done have basically gone back to pretty much, you know, 99% carbon dioxide and water vapor. And all the other stuff, the bad stuff, has been taken out. So cars are actually replacing carbon dioxide. Go ahead.
Your carburation techniques and your fuel system in automobiles is much, much better than it was back in those days.
Oh, absolutely.
Those days you had gravity. You had gravity-fed carburation, and the metering was done by orifices of a certain size and a rod that went down in the hole that was tapered.
And so a butterfly valve to let the air in and all those other stupid
stuff. You know
stuff.
What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'll tell you what. I'll give you a good example. You a pilot. And you fly upside down in a Cessna 172? No. It doesn't
Not legally.
Have a pressurized fuel system.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fuel injection. Well, that required, I guess that would be required. I never thought about that, but all the airbag planes have to have either fuel injection or a pressurized system. Otherwise, they would quit. Remember the old little Battle of Britain stuff? This is before both our times, by the way, folks, that the Hurricanes and Spitfires, the Merlin engine originally had a carburetor. So when they were chasing the Messerschmitts, you know, Messerschmitts would just dive down. You know, they'd go into a negative G dive, and the Spitfires and Hurricanes couldn't follow them until they rolled upside down because they had to maintain positive G so the fuel would flow. So that's how the Messerschmitts used to get away from them. Until the British got, and they put fuel injection in their engines too, in the Merlins, did that, it was pretty much equalized. But it's kind of a funny system. But here's the point I want to make on this, is that I'm looking at this big chart of the carbon cycle, and whether carbon's released from volcanoes, whether it's released from, you know, biomaterials and other things, whether it comes out of the ocean, whether it comes out of the land, whether it comes out of the trees, a fire or anything, or even, you know, our own emissions from factories, cars, you know, things like that. The one thing that ties all this together, I want to talk to Gregory about this. The one thing that ties all the carbon together is the atmosphere. So the atmosphere covers everything.
Right. And your phone is skipping.
It is?
Yeah. Ask Marco, does he hear it?
Check with Marco, I might have too many.
These phone services screwed up. I got to get a new, because Verizon has bought up my service company, and I can't text until I put in another SIM card. So I'm getting rid of that. I'm going to another American friendly service company. The heck with these foreigners.
I got AT&T. you know, and that's where my modem works. And that's, you know, so I got one of these, you know, I finally got a UPS, uninterrupted power supply, and the plug came out just a fraction of an inch, and actually it shut down this morning. And I found my Roku TV, the sound is horrible. So that's kind of off. So I don't know what's going on, but
you better now, whatever you've done. But yeah, continue with your story. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, that's okay. No, the only thing, well, see, you know, I try to keep the number of websites down, keep the windows, you know, to a minimum. That's generally where we have problems. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out that extra website. Yeah, that's not the one I want. Yeah, I think it's going to head that one up. But the Carbon Cycle is, well, that's a website that uses a lot of energy. Actually, I can probably get rid of that one. I don't think I need that one as much now because I pretty
but
much.
But you know, you were talking about the atmosphere, Greg.
Yep.
You're absolutely right, because one of the reasons, see, at the bottom of the ocean bed, you have volcanoes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for the pressure of the water and also atmospheric pressure, which is 299 and 2, I believe, at
sea
level,
yep,
then guess what would happen? You would have all sort of eruptions at the ocean bed, thus spewing sulfuric and other gases into the atmosphere. It would be unlivable.
Well,
so
the oceans, that's something I don't know
about. All these
things
are based on a balance, and it works out pretty damn good.
Well, most of the CO2 is in the ocean. That's where it is, and I should talk to Gregory about that. And there are cycles when it's warmer, CO2 comes out of the ocean. So we actually do better in those circumstances. But anyway, but the carbon cycle is fascinating because, again, the atmosphere ties the land and ties the water together. So any carbon source, to get to any other carbon source, it has to go through the atmosphere, which is fascinating. And so if we don't put carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere, basically we're dead. And so most of the increase in carbon dioxide, you know, other than natural sources, has been us, human activity. And if you look at, like I say, you look at intelligent design and God, you know, putting a little hand in here, that was the time to do it. So it's fascinating to me that the time when we had the lowest carbon dioxide levels that were dangerously low, that's when we discovered petroleum, you know, and the internal combustion engine started the Industrial Revolution and did exactly what we needed to do, which is put carbon back in the air so we would live. They didn't know it at the time. And a lot of people today think it's just the opposite, idiots. But it is critical for us to keep putting carbon dioxide back
into
the air.
Yeah, what happened, there was a greater demand, as man, quote-unquote, population increased. So the balance that had been established before you reached that point of greater demand was fine. It was perfectly fine. But when you start putting on a greater demand, then things have to change in order to continue the life cycle. And that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, there's a greater demand for food now, too, because there's a lot more people. Now we can feed those people. You know, it might be nice if people actually, you know, didn't have 20 kids, but you know, but the thing is, there's a lot of people, and the problem is not food; it's distribution. And so we've got the, you know, so but the carbon dioxide in the air, you know, makes a whole lot of food. So we can support
and
a planet,
you know, another
of
thing
billions
too,
of people.
You have to have the you have to apply the science in agriculture. Organic food is not going to feed the world. That would have worked 300,000 years ago. But as populations increase and greater demand for yield per acre, you have to use scientific methods. I'm sorry. If you want to have your organic garden, you can have that in the backyard. But you can't have that in no production form. It just won't work.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Let's, like we do with conspiracies and reality, there's a line. There's a line between, you know, like crossbreeding different crops, you know, to make a better whatever. And then the line to cross is when you start getting in genetic modification, where you actually go in and rearrange the DNA that does not occur in nature. So that's the problem. So the problem is rearranging DNA. But if you take different varieties of apple and you just like crossbreed them, nature does that anyway, you know, and so that's okay. So as long as you're, you know, it's the difference between researching a virus and creating a new one, like COVID is an engineered virus. They're not researching, you know, how to make it better because, you know, to cure it. I mean, they're researching how to make it better so they can, you know, sell more vaccines. You know, it's a very nefarious purpose. So the question, So the line for me is, are you doing something that involves natural products, crossbreeding. Nitrogen fertilizer is a natural product. You know,
the fertilizer is made out of a, guess what, natural gas.
Exactly.
That's just
what, and it goes
the plant
is
only looking for the nitrogen. How you get there, the plant don't care. Give me my nitrogen. That's what the plant asks for.
Yep. Yeah, and especially as we drain the some of the soil of some of its resources, you know, but you got to do crop rotations and things like that. But as I understand it, plants have like nitrogen nodules, or they have ways to take in nitrogen from the soil, and they take in carbon dioxide from the air, and they give off, and they take in water, and they mix it all together and grow, and then they give off oxygen. It's a really great system. So you want to talk about intelligent design? The plants give off oxygen, and we give off carbon dioxide. the cycle continues. You know, it's really quite fascinating. But I just find it amazing that at the very time we had the lowest carbon dioxide levels, we discovered, you know, petroleum. That to me is fascinating. And so these idiots, these morons that come along and say, we have to get rid of all carbon, either they don't know what they're talking about on purpose. In other words, they're idiots, or they do know what they're talking about and they want to kill everybody. Either way, they're wrong.
Yeah, they know what they're talking about. The people that's listening don't know what they're talking about. That's where the problem lies. And it goes along with the ignorance in the educational system.
Yeah. But, you know, and it's – well, here's the thing, too. I mean, everything – I mean, I talk about the logic and reason filter all the time. Everything goes through a logic and reason filter here. You know, even Josie's rather interesting theories. And if they make sense, okay. And if it doesn't make sense, I'll call it out. But, you know, there's no logic taught. There's no basic – I mean, this is critical thinking. Go ahead.
There's nothing wrong with theories, but you have to prove them to be facts. Mm-hmm. If you can't prove it, then it becomes too conspiracy. If you got a theory, prove it. Take it into a laboratory or whatever, in your kitchen, and you whatever, and make it, prove it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
If it can't be proved, it's nothing but a controversy.
Sometimes you can prove by logic. You know, and just by irrefutable evidence, you know, known facts, you know, can get you to a conclusion. Circumstantial evidence does that all the time in court. But people, they don't think about that. So, well, you know, it's like there's no proof the election was stolen. There's mountains of proof. You just haven't looked. So people actually have to look to make for an honest discussion. All right, I want to talk about the CO2 Coalition for a bit, because this is Gregory Wrightstones. He's the director of the organization. Now, Gregory used to be on the show somewhat regularly. You know, he was on it when I was at WBY. He was on early on in Blog Talk Radio before his book came out. He was pretty easy to get. Now he's almost impossible because, you know, he does all these huge network shows and big news shows and things like that. So we're really lucky to get him back. So I'm definitely going to maximize the time. But you can ask him about I'll bring you on at some point just for that one question, unless we have more time. We'll see how it goes. But that'd be a good question to ask about the glacial cores, because that's what he does. He's a climate geologist. That's his specialty. He knows all about that stuff. So that would be interesting, because I'm sure he's so used to dealing with, you know, unfriendly and ignorant audiences. And he doesn't have to do that here. We're going to jumpstart right to the good stuff. So I'm going to direct everybody to the CO2 Coalition.
I can work the chat room, because it's better for your brain.
Okay. Yeah, do that. Just, in fact, you can ask a question there, too, and I can always ask him directly. Okay. So that's a good thing. I wish more people would make use of that. Anyway, so CO2Coalition.org. O-R-G. So CO2Coalition.org is his organization in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside D.C. So the CO2 Coalition was established in 2015 as a nonpartisan educational foundation operating under Section 510C3 of the IRS code. I guess that wasn't, you know, totally obliterated by Lois Lerner back when. That's not in there. That's just me. This is for the purpose of educating thought leaders, policymakers, and public, that's us, about the most important contribution made by carbon dioxide to our lives and the economy. Coalition seeks to engage in an informed and dispassionate discussion. Well, we don't do dispassionate here. We do passionate. We're very passionate about our discussions of climate change, humans' role in the climate system, the limitations of climate models, and the consequences of mandated reductions in CO2 emissions. Yeah, this is going to be good. I wish I had him for an hour. We used to. Not anymore. You know, the big folks would get to 30 minutes and that's it. So that's the CO2 Coalition. And then they had this thing on facts, providing the facts about CO2 and climate change. I started reading through them, and I thought this would be kind of good for us to go through. So I will give you a fact, and you can react to it. It's going to block live chat. I'll check back with Marco, who I guess we're broadcasting okay now. He hasn't said anything about our signal and your signal line too. So I have to block off live chat for a little bit. But I'll be back. Okay, here's the first of the fact number one. 140 million year trend of dangerously decreasing CO2. Let me say that again. For 140 million years, this is what these guys do when they do those ice cores way down, you know, 100,000 feet, right? Or, well, not that much, however far it is. 140 million year trend of dangerously decreasing CO2. So let's go back to 140 million years ago. Parts per million was 2,500. And it goes down, 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 down. Present day, it's like, what does Marco say? Well, this chart looks to be about 250, maybe. 130 is where everything dies. So from 2,500, we're about one-tenth of the CO2 from 140 million years ago. That's interesting. Chart says, for the last 140 million years, CO2 levels fell precipitously and steadily to within 30 parts per million of the 150 parts per million line of death. This is where I got it from, right? Below which plants cannot survive. Both the relatively short-term data from the ice cores and much longer-term data going back 140 million years show an alarming downward trend towards CO2 starvation. The release of carbon dioxide by the use of fossil fuels, which we call organic fuels, has allowed humanity to increase concentrations of this beneficial molecule and perhaps avert an actual CO2-related climate apocalypse. Now, wouldn't it be shocking if everybody got the message that the burning of organic fuels is critical for our survival? You know, they should subsidize all gas-powered vehicles, right? I mean, I want to get this to Trump. You know, I didn't want to talk to Christina Bob about this stuff because that's not her specialty. She doesn't like to get too far from the legal stuff. She's very good at the legal stuff. She's an expert at it, you know, but I find that experts a lot of times, they can't diversify. So the one thing about this show is we cover so many different topics. You really have to know a little bit about everything, you know, to do this show. And but this is why I bring experts on who know a lot about one thing, more than I know about that particular thing. But Bianchi, do you find that interesting? The release of carbon dioxide by the use of organic fuels has allowed humanity to increase concentrations of this beneficial molecule and perhaps avert an actual CO2-related climate apocalypse. That's pretty strong stuff.
Well, yeah, what he's saying is actually right. And like I said before, before he got into the business of revealing that information and taking time off what he was probably other doing, well, it's a big major part of his life. It's a shame that you have to go through this from time to time because you have people that come in and bamboozle the public based on their ignorance, and they reap rewards off of it. They rape the public. They steal their money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's going on now. You're killing the oil industry and all the people that's been dependent upon that, not only in a weekly income, but also retirees. You got thousands and thousands of retirees and people that's in all areas along the way from upstream to downstream. Now they want to kill that.
Oh, yeah, and this is another reason we talk about a constitutional amendment to stop Congress borrowing money, because that would increase the value of everybody's money. Your savings would increase. You know, instead of losing 5% of your money, the value of your money, you'd probably, you know, if we get deflation, you would gain 5% of your money, which means everybody would automatically get a raise, especially those on fixed incomes. You know, seniors living on Social Security and other fixed incomes, all their purchasing power would increase. They'd actually get a raise. So if you can buy you know, a dollar five's worth of stuff for a dollar this year and a dollar ten's worth of stuff next year. I mean, this doesn't sound like a lot, but you start spending, you know, money, serious money, it bounces up pretty fast.
And you need to have a constitutional amendment to get the federal government out of the practice of trying to control the activities on state land and charge
fees another one.
To the commerce. That money should go to the state. Somebody told me that the federal government done something where the Alaskans don't receive their stipends every, you know, periodically
I think
they were from the extractor.
Well, that would take some investigation. I'm not sure. I don't know. As far as I know, they still do. But I don't know for sure, so that might take some investigating. I have a friend up in Alaska, so I'm getting contacts all around the country. It's really interesting. So I'll talk to her about that. Anyway, fact number two. The warming effect of each molecule of CO2 declines as its concentration increases. So gaining more CO2 proportionally has less effect on any kind of warming effect. That's interesting. And actually, I've heard that the climate warms up and then there's more CO2, not the other way around. CO2 does not cause warming. it's a result of warming. Anyway, it says here, climate scientists have determined that, and question? Pianki? I heard a noise.
No, I didn't have anything. I was just thinking. Okay. When you burn organic food fuels, yeah, you produce CO2. A key word there is burn, warming.
I don't think the burning, I don't think the internal combustion engine warms the earth, you know, because it doesn't radiate enough heat far enough to make a difference. Maybe an entire city, well, cities are warmer by a couple of degrees, but the minute you get outside the city, you get away from all that, all those vehicles and everything else like that, and the temperature is going to go back to normal. That's why when they do climate temperature, you know, things, they put them in parking lots, they put them next to air conditioning, you know, heat vents, you know, they put these temperature sensors in the worst possible places. Oh, it's warmer. No, it's not. Just put it next to the jet engine. Yeah.
During the time of Halley Comet, I used to take my daughter to the outskirts of the city with our binoculars so we could see through the atmosphere. It was clear. So, yes.
Oh, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I did that during the Perseids, whatever it's called, meteor showers every year. Yeah, I take my kid. We go find some dark mountaintop. And it was in the Bay Area. There's plenty of high places away from lights. And we sit there and watch. I remember watching with about 20 or 30 folks. Really big meteor. Big one. Covered the whole sky and lit up everything. And it was a bright green trail. It was weird. It was like, oh, boy, that was a big one. So, yeah, it's fascinating. Anyway, so this is climate fact number dos. We've got climate scientists have determined that both sides agree that the warming effect of each molecule of CO2 decreases significantly logarithmically, which is not a one-to-one ratio. It's an exponential decrease as the concentration increases. This is one reason why there was no runaway greenhouse warming when the concentration of CO2 was approaching 20 times that of today. This inconvenient fact, which is what Gregory's book is called, important though it is kept very well hidden and is rarely ever mentioned, for it undermines the theory of future catastrophic climate change, diminishing returns apply. So I should ask him about that. So this would be fact number two. Let's make a copy of this, and I'll put this in my growing list of questions. So what do you think of that, Pianki? Does that make sense that each, you know, it's diminishing returns? As you add more stuff, each additional bit of stuff has less effect.
Well, Mother Nature does the best. You know how long the Earth has been forming and the environment has been forming to where it can support life?
Yeah.
You know, the United States continent was basically a big forest.
Yeah. Actually, it was grasslands.
At one point in time.
What I've heard is
grasslands,
and now
yes.
It's forest. It's actually doing better now than the 1700s, 1800s. It was much more grasslands, and the grasslands were far less fertile than the forests are now. So it's much more forest land. Bureau of Land Management, the forestry folks, you know, there's far more trees now than there used to be, which is interesting.
You got way more nutrients out of a pound of spinach 4,000 years ago than what you do today. Because of depletion.
Yeah.
And what do you do in order to bring that depletion back? Well, try to put things back the way it was. Grow more trees, especially in those areas where it has become desertification. The way to stop desertification is grow stuff.
Yeah. Well,
the way to stop soil erosion is to grow stuff.
Well, see, that's a problem.
The way to replenish the aquifers is to make roads impervious to rainfall water. So it goes right through and goes right back to the ground and replenish the aquifers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And everything's, like you say, everything's a cycle. It's quite fascinating. So here's fact number three. CO2 is plant food. and it says plants love CO2 for a good reason. This is Dr. Craig Idso. So anybody wants to see what I'm doing, go to the CO2coalition.org. website, facts about climate change. That's where I am right now. And so he's got a little pine tree, and he's got 385 parts per million, which is ambient, and it's about, you know, waist high. Then he's got 535, which is 150 parts per million more, and it's like belly high. And then he's got one at 685 parts per million, and that's 300 over ambient, and that's like chest high. And then at 835 parts per million, you know, it's up up to his nose. You know, same growing time. And so CO2 makes plants grow. There's a, you know, if you take an actual greenhouse, an actual greenhouse, you know, is warmer and has more CO2 than the atmosphere around it. That's what makes plants grow. That's why people have greenhouses, so they can grow things bigger, better, and faster than they would out in the natural environment, which is interesting. And then these folks come along and they say that, CO2 is a greenhouse gas that's causing the earth to warm. I said, really? At less than 0.5%, it's 0.04% of the atmosphere. I said, if you took all the glass in a greenhouse except for 0.04% and you just took all that glass away, how effective do you think that greenhouse would be? It'd be like one little panel on the corner somewhere. You know, it'd be like, a 5-inch square of glass. That'd be it. There's your 0.04% greenhouse coverage. So it's not going to trap a whole lot of heat anyway. So we've got here the good reasons. It's the CO2 concentration is starving trees and plants of the food they need to achieve their full growth potential via photosynthesis. Additional benefits: increased photosynthesis, plants grow faster with less stress and less water. Oh, that's interesting. Less water. I didn't know that. Forests are growing faster, stimulates growth of beneficial bacteria. So that's probably your nitrogen nodule breaking down bacteria on both soil and water. More plant growth means less erosion of topsoil. That's what Pianki just mentioned. Bigger crop yields and more and bigger flowers. Pianki mentioned that too. Fosters glomalin. I don't know what that is. A beneficial protein created by root fungi. Who knows? Less water loss, less irrigation, and more soil moisture. Increase in natural repellents to fight insect predators. So you don't need as many pesticides. So CO2 really cures everything. It's like the miracle chemical. It's like the miracle compound, and yet we're trying to get rid of it. Pianki?
Well, Greg, all it is a money grab ploy of trying to put another industry into effect where these politicians can derive donations for their candidacy from these industries. These donations are unchecked. You don't know how they spent. I mean, it's just a contingent of demonic activity that's going on. It's going to devastate people's lives to go from one to the other. The government should have nothing to do with that. It should be based on markets of demand and supply.
Makes sense. Let me give you another one here. This is fact number 10. Modern warming began more than 300 years ago. What? Hello? Are we getting an echo? Am I broadcasting okay? Hello, hello?
Pianki? Yeah, you okay?
Okay, just want to make sure. Yeah, I hear silence. I worry. This is why I'm trying to get a producer back. You know, I need someone that I can instantly talk to make sure everything's going well. Because they refuse to give me digital meters, dB meters, decibel meters on my screen. So I never know if I'm sending out a signal or not. And so I've been trying to do that for about 5 years now with Blog Talk. All right, fact number 10, warming began 300 years ago. It says the central England temperature record, the Hadset, contains the longest continuously measured thermometer-based regional temperature data set in the world, going back more than 350 years. Well, that's interesting. This record began in 1659 in the depths of the Little Ice Age, 1250 to 1800, which was marked by some of the coldest temperatures in nearly 8,000 years. The period of the late 17th century, so that would be the 1600s, and the early 18th century, which would be the 1700s, I wish they wouldn't do that. It screws me up every time, was a horrifically cold period known as the Maunder Minimum. I've heard that before. Thankfully, the current warming trend we are in began in the year 1695. Well, that's interesting. The next 40 years had more than twice the rate of warming as we experienced in the 20th century. The first half of this 300-plus year warming had about the same amount of temperature rise as the latter half and was entirely naturally driven. The natural forces driving temperature changes for the first 200 years of this temperature history did not cease functioning in the 20th century. So in other words, people say, well, the Industrial Revolution warmed the planet. No, it didn't. It was already warming by a lot, you know. And so these people, again, it's got to be communism. And the root of all climate change nonsense is communism. It's the way to scare people into believing something and allowing for a change in lifestyle that's completely unnecessary. Here's another one, number 11. So we can pull up number 11. This is kind of fun, actually. Melting glaciers confirm modern warming predated the increase of CO2. Let's see if there's an explanation for this. Melting glaciers and rising sea levels are a direct result of warming. Well, that's pretty obvious. The evidence shows that the global warming causing the rise in sea levels and the retreat of the glaciers began long before any significant man-made CO2 increases could have influenced either. Both are directly the result of the natural warming that began in the late 17th century. So this is the 1600s. So if the world's been warming up since the 1600s, what kind of technology did we have in the 1600s? We had wooden sailing ships. We had horse-drawn wagons. We had, they built some of the big cathedrals, so they would have had some kind of concrete. This is your department, Pianchi. What are those cathedrals built? What's Notre Dame built of? That was built in the 1600s, wasn't it? How'd they build that?
How'd they build what in 1600s?
Notre Dame, these old cathedrals. What kind of building materials did they use?
Well, what they built was stone. They didn't have reinforced concrete. You know another thing that causes problems is when you establish large bodies of water. You know, if you took a tank and put it in the back of a pickup truck and it was full of water, you made a turn, well, they would try to turn the truck up unless you put baffles in the tank. So when China builds its Three Gorges Dam, it acts as an inertial momentum that causes the earth to slow up a little bit. But when you're facing a great big giant sun, that little bit makes a big difference. Things going to get warmer.
Yeah, that would be an interesting question. Type that one in. I'll see if I can ask Gregory that. That might be it's not a question I'm sure he's had before, and it's something you've mentioned it before, and I haven't seen anything on it yet. But it doesn't mean it's not a real factor. Let me get back. Here's another part of this other question here. It says glaciers could not begin to retreat and cease to rise until the atmosphere warmed sufficiently to allow the summer ice loss to exceed winter accumulations. Yeah, you got to have, you don't have melting, you got to have more melting than you have, you know, increase. This is that glacial tipping point occurred around 1800 with full on retreat by 1850. So 1850, that's about the time before the Industrial Revolution, is like right before it when CO2 was at its lowest. That's interesting. And then it says, thus began more than 150 years of worldwide glacial retreat and sea level rise that continues at about the same rate today as it was 150 years ago. So the Industrial Revolution has had no effect on that. The burning of organic fuels has no effect on that because it was already going before we had Industrial Revolution. Well, that's why I asked about the stone, about the building materials, because the technology, there was nothing in the 1600s when the earth started warming that you know, man-made influence could have influenced. That was the point of that question.
Well, bricks and stone was made out of the earth, clay, and what's called layer trail. You know, in some remote villages in areas like in Africa, they use the soil and add some ingredients. It's called layer trail, and they put it in forms, set it out in the sun. And they use that to build it. But now you use concrete. And concrete has to be reinforced because it doesn't have tensile strength. It has compression strength, but not tensile strength. It makes a difference.
You said it earlier.
And you ever notice that after the sun go down, how hot it still is in the cities? Well, because the concrete is radiating the heat that it absorbed during the day.
Right. Because the air is cooler around it, so it actually warms the air. Oh, yeah, and again, I remember seeing a report years ago that some guy did a photograph of where all those temperature sensors were that they were using for so-called, you know, climate change analysis, and they were in the middle of asphalt parking lots. They were on top of hot buildings. They were next to air condition, you know, where the hot air comes out of an air conditioner. I think one was at the airport near the jet engines. I mean, they put these things in the worst possible places. Oh, global warming. No, it's not. It's jet engine warming, you idiot. Anyway,
in the northern regions would build a house, and that house would have southern exposure, and right inside the wall, the glass wall, they would have a thermal mass, and that thermal mass would be stone, basically a concrete or something dark. It would absorb the heat. Sometimes they use water tubes, too, and at night, it would give off the heat to help heat the house. It would have to use artificial energy.
Yeah, this is the principle of the solar water heating system. It's got a dark material,
yeah.
So it absorbs the heat, and then at nighttime it cools. So you can reverse it. You can put it both ways. It can actually dissipate heat or absorb heat. Oh, yeah. It's the same old technology. That's why trees, you know, if you want to find out northern versus southern, the northern ones have the moss on them. You know, the southern side
right.
doesn't.
And well, you can look.
You know, yeah.
I've stayed in accommodations in Africa where they don't have water heaters. They have dark tanks, black tanks that store water, and when the sun comes up, it heats the water, and you can take a warm shower.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, if they could probably do it at night to absorb the heat from the place and cool it down. Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, here's the one. Interglacials usually last 10,000 years, 10 to 15,000 years, at the interglacial periods. Ours is 11,000 years old, so we're kind of at the tail end of our interglacial. I'm not really looking forward to an ice age, you know, but the time I have left, I don't think I have to worry about it, but even so, I would not want to be through an ice age. I don't want to have to go hunt mammoths with the Cro-Magnons. And it says here, the period of glaciation periods are 100,000 year cycles, driven by natural forces beyond our control. In other words, liberals can't legislate it. The warmer interglacials last 10 to 15,000 years. Importantly, we are now about 11,000 years into our current interglacial period, which may end within the next century or last another several thousand years. That's optimistic. In any case, the beneficial interglacial warmth that we are enjoying now will end at some point in the not-too-distant future in a geological sense. When the next ice age descends upon us, it will be a true climate apocalypse accompanied by crop failures, famine, mass immigration from colder to warmer regions, oh, great, Florida, and unprecedented population loss. Yeah, because you can't survive in, you know, the top extremes and the bottom extremes of the world, you know, under ice. So looking at the last 4,000 years of climate and history, bad things happening during cold periods, very bad things. Cooler periods brought severe hardship and death, but the descent into the true ice age would be horrific for humanity, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. Oh, boy. Yeah. In fact, let me copy that. This is when the next ice just says, all right, so let's fourth. How much more? Yeah. I'm just going to take this little sentence here. That'll be cheery. So most people don't know that. They're worried about carbon dioxide warming the earth, and we're facing the end of our warming period. And I don't think people are thinking about that. Huh. All right, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a little, let's just do the fact number 14.
You know, during those glacial periods, I don't know if you've ever studied it,
uh-huh.
but you had ice in areas, ice extends down from the northern region of the earth down as far as Tennessee.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And you had ice that was as much as a mile thick in the New York area.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Look at
that's,
your Grand
Canyon. Well, yeah.
The Grand Canyon is in, and your major rivers like the Mississippi, that trough was formed by glaciers that was extending and moving down into what we call now the Delta region. It's where they melted. Ice moved, and when it moved along the ground, moved along the rocks, carves it out, scrapes it. And when it's all gone, you have what you got. The Mississippi River used to be further east than where it is now.
Yeah.
And now it's further west.
Yeah, see, I'd never heard about the idea that it was that thick, you know. But I remember the Grand Canyon I was thinking of. I never heard that was a product. I always thought that was the Colorado River. Okay, I'm back on live chat. I've kind of moved stuff around a little bit. But I know Yosemite, you know, Half Dome. The reason it's Half Dome is because the other half got taken off by a glacier. That's how powerful the ice is. And so if you think about it, where would the habitable areas of the Earth be? Now, here's a thought. Maybe these world government stooges are worried, actually know that the planet is going to go through, you know, potentially another ice age at some point soon, and they want to lower the population, you know, their way rather than have it lowered, you know, by the coming ice age. I should ask Gregory about that too.
Well, it's going to lower naturally, but yes, ice was that thick, if not even thicker.
All right, let me take a break. I'm going to write that question down. That'd be interesting. So we've got Gregory coming up in about 10 minutes. So it's now 7:49. Let me get my contact information for everybody, and I'll be right back.
Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
So I'm back. I've got Pianchi online and on the live chat. We got Marco in the Netherlands on live chat. Anybody wants to join in, you know, feel free. I won't be taking calls much with Gregory when he's here, but he's only here for half an hour. And so we got the back half hour, and then we got CJ on wellness. So we've got time to talk about this. We haven't done climate change stuff. I don't know why we call it climate change. We should just call it climate stuff. Every time you say climate change, you're almost reinforcing the propaganda. But I think Pianchi had a comment here. He says, green energy is yet another bamboozle on the ignorance of people who it is being directed at. Doom and gloom has devastated the lives of millions who only realized that they were had after the greedy demons, you know, have come and gone, devastating lives along the way. Yeah, green energy is another thing we should talk about as well, because this whole idea is crazy. I mean, we don't need electric cars. We've got perfectly good gasoline cars. We've got plenty of petroleum in this country. As Trump was saying, actually, Pianchi, I don't know if you saw this, and Mark probably you didn't see this, but just in case, Trump's speech yesterday. I mean, I don't watch the goober debates because I don't care about the goobers. That would be the GOP globalist deep staters, which I call goobers. So the goobers were talking to themselves, and the political masturbation show is what I called it yesterday. I don't usually do that, but every once in a while. But Trump had a really great speech in front of this auto parts manufacturing place. They make, I guess, transmissions, gear shifts, you know, linkages and stuff. They make stuff that make trucks go. And they're in Michigan, and they're all for Trump. And Trump was calling on the United Auto Workers to endorse him, which I think is hysterical. But it actually would be in their interest. But they were talking about, you know, these electric cars are going to kill the jobs. There's nothing good from electric cars that I can see. If people want to buy them, you know, okay, but you should have a $25,000 hazmat fee for the battery. There should not be any subsidies of any kind, and there certainly shouldn't be any mandates that we have to, you know, buy what the government, what the leftist progressives want us to buy. Because they're mined with child slave labor. They're dangerous chemicals of lithium and cadmium. The batteries are too heavy, you know, and, you know, if you want to conserve a little gasoline, you know, buy a hybrid. Hybrids seem to me the best of all worlds. You know, especially for city driving. They're not so good on the highways. But city driving, hybrids are great because every time you're braking, you're charging the battery. So hybrids make sense. Little tiny engine, you know, but they don't have no battery. They don't need it. They just have a regular car battery, as far as I know. Anyway, this, you know, all the green stuff is bad. You know, it's, you know, the windmills kill birds. The windmills in the ocean kill whales. Yeah, there's nothing good from this. And we don't need it. That's the other thing. We don't need it.
That idea of having a vehicle that's going to have an alternator or charging system on the vehicle as it runs to charge the battery, that don't work out too well.
Tell me about hybrids.
Nothing new.
All right, so if I got it wrong, hybrids,
when you have two fuel systems, you have gasoline and something else. Good hybrid is it's still fuel, the best. People will find out you can't explain things to some folks. And what you have in now, you've seen it before. You know, there was a time when you had liveries with horses, yep. And the people would go in and rent horses, carriages, and so on and so on. Well, then the automobile came and took over that industry. Mm-hmm. Now what you got now, you got people who've got this hell-bentness on electric vehicle. They're trying to take over the modern traditional automobile industry. It's what they're trying to do.
And there's nothing wrong with the automobile industry. In fact, if anything, and this is something that I think the automobile industry themselves should push. They should get out there. They got the money. They should have a marketing campaign. CO2 is good, you know, and you know, we love CO2. That's the CO2 coalition. That's what they keep saying. But it'd be nice to – I'm going to write a note for that. Maybe another note for Gregory. You know, with car companies. Car company CO2 marketing. You know, burn gasoline, save the planet. You know, I mean, why not? I mean, they should.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. But you know how you get to this point and where you all of a sudden find yourself in a battle is that beforehand you didn't educate your population, i.e. your children. Children not being educated in biology, not being educated in science. So as they become adults, they can be sold any cock and boogle story. And they'll believe it out of fear and act so.
Well, fear, the climate change stuff took lessons from COVID. You know, the whole COVID was all based on fear. It wasn't based on knowledge. Marco has another point, too. He says, oh, there's Gregory now. Marco says, in the Netherlands, they actively changed old weather data, so it seems we have more heat waves now than in the past. And I'll ask Gregory about that in just a second.
I'm going on mute.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm going to bring him on right now. And Gregory, we've been talking climate change for the whole hour before he got here. But let me do our traditional guest of the day for our guest, Gregory Wrightstone. So my bio said he's a climate change analyst, which sounds like a new title for me. A geologist, which I do know, and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. He's a best-selling author of Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. He's also been on Action Radio quite a few times, mostly before he became, you know, famous and well-known and on all the news shows. So we can't get him anymore, except on rare occasions. So I'm glad to have you back, sir. Gregory, how you doing?
Oh, good, good. Oh, come on now. You're I'm always glad to be back on with you, Greg.
Oh, I know you're
come
glad
on.
To be back on, but
yeah,
it's just
you let me
it's
know.
Hard to get you. It's harder to get you because you're so popular. let me give you a cheer here.
I'm just busy.
Yeah. So just to let you know, you're among friends, you know, and I want to get into stuff that you probably don't get to talk about on most shows because you got to defend just the basics. You know, CO2 is good. So we already know CO2 is good. We've been going over the CO2 Coalition website, all the facts, the climate facts, and I've got questions. I've got Marco in the Netherlands on live chat. I've got Pianchi, who's muted himself. He might type in a question as well. But let's get into this. Is this a new title for you, climate change analyst, or is that something that
I don't know where you got that, but I guess.
Okay.
You know, I'll take it.
All right. Well, I
got to say, where I'm in I'll let you know I'm in Denver today.
Okay.
I'm here to we're rolling out. It's the release of a new documentary I'm featured in. It'll be airing on Newsmax TV beginning in October.
Okay.
It's called A Climate Conversation. Very high quality. Very well done. Might be one of the best, or if not the best, documentary on the subject from our perspective. Maybe it's been done, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I love it. I want to get into that. We were just talking before you came on about the auto companies. You know, we're thinking they've got all the money in the world to advertise and things like that. And we've been discussing how good, you know, CO2 is for the environment and how the Industrial Revolution basically saved the planet. You know, the internal combustion engine, the steam engine, you know, burning organic compounds, you know, wood, coal, oil, natural gas to put carbon dioxide back in the environment to complete the carbon cycle. How come the auto companies don't advertise that? Say, look, we are here. We're saving the planet. Drive a V8. You know, they could actually market this in the positive. What do you think?
That's actually not a bad idea, but it would fly in the face of what just about everybody know. You know it. I know it. Maybe your listeners, mm-hmm. everybody knows it. But the vast majority of people, you know, 96% or 98% of the people don't buy into that yet. They've not been exposed to that. You know, it'd be a great risk for them. But they're taking a great risk anyhow, embracing electric vehicles. I mean, these things are, there's so much wrong with this EV vehicles and the electric economy. I just got a connection in Australia, and I hadn't heard of it until I just received it, about a huge Tesla battery fire in Australia. And all the firefighters were told to back off, just let it burn, because there's no way they're going to put it out. And the toxic fumes are just horrific coming off of these lithium ion batteries. So that's a real, real danger. And I've been talking about this for many years. At some point, there will be an EV fire in some enclosed parking garage that will end up being horrific. And
it's like
hasn't
like
happened
bomb.
Yet, thankfully.
Yeah.
Well, oh, my goodness.
We had the hurricane.
Think of it underneath a building. Huh?
Yeah. Well, remember the hurricanes when they had a hurricane in Florida, I think last year, and all the electric vehicles, they all caught fire and, you know, kind of exploded.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot wrong with it. I've got a supporter that's big in the automobile dealership business. He runs a large dealership. We were talking last week. He said that EVs in their floor or that they keep at each dealership have exceeded 90-day supply. He said, you know, for us, we like to keep it well under 30-day supply. We want to be moving vehicles, and they're just not moving off the lot. People don't want to buy them. There's a big day of reckoning coming for these auto manufacturers. And I understand you have someone from the Netherlands on. I just listened to a wonderful young lady, Eva, I'm going to butcher her name.
Van Dingerbroek. Yeah, she's one of the people I most want to have dinner with, just because she's absolutely gorgeous. But she's brilliant. She's a philosopher.
Maiden
legal
of the far right. They're calling her Shield Maiden of the Far Right. Love it.
Oh, really? Oh, that's fascinating. Marco says, oh, here we go. He's diving it in. No, because he knows. It's like, she's one of the most beautiful women on the planet. But I've never, you know, like I said, to someone I'd love to talk to about. I mean, how often do you get a chance to talk to a legal philosopher? You know, or she's got some specialty that's really interesting. Well, I think I shortchanged you on your video. So let's go back to that, the new one that's coming out. Do you have some new information? Can you break some news with us here, or do you want to save it for the video?
Well, there's nothing new that breaks in the documentary. It's just that it's we're going mainstream with our message. It's me and Ken Gregory from Friends of Science of Canada, looking at the economics. Ron Stein at EVs and the just the energy situation where we can't get to net zero. And then I was talking about the science of climate change. And it's the big story here is it's a highly professional, well-edited, well-produced documentary that's going mainstream on Newsmax TV. We haven't really seen that. Well, we haven't. It's not what we really have. It hasn't happened before. So we should, you know, we're excited about that. And the other thing you may not know is I have a new book. We'll be sending it off for printing next week. Mm-hmm. And the title is A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Bam. And so this is a celebration of warmth and more CO2. And we're taking it right to them in this book. I'm really, really happy with how it turned out. If you liked Inconvenient Facts, you're going to love A Convenient Warming. And you can look a little bit more. I've got a new website, rolled it out. You can go to convenientwarming.com, convenientwarming.com. You can check out the cover of the book, which I love. And it's really just, again, it's a celebration of how Earth's ecosystems are thriving and prospering. And we, in the human condition, is improving because of that. I call it the biggest untold story of the late 20th and early 21st century.
See, this is where I think you can be really successful, is with a positive message, because we hear all the doom and gloom. We have to go electric. We're going to die. We have to get rid of CO2. We're all going to die. Of course, just the opposite is true. But if you can get a positive message, you can talk about, you know, the Renaissance happened during a warming period. You know, the Industrial Revolution, you know, put carbon dioxide back into the air and saved us, you know, we had a theory that kind of developed here, and it was confirmed by the founder of Greenpeace. I don't know which came first, my theory or his. I don't know if I read it or thought about it or then thought about it and read it. But anyway, the Industrial Revolution came at a time when we had 180 parts per million, 30 parts per million away from death, you know, 150. And it's interesting that most of the CO2 has come into the atmosphere of late from, you know, internal combustion engines. But that's a good thing. And I pulled up the chart of the carbon cycle. I got it from the Encyclopedia Britannica. And what I found, from volcanoes to oceans to land to human, you know, burning of what we call organic fuels, the one thing that connects all of those together is the atmosphere. So everything goes through CO2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would be a useful thing to talk about, too. Have I got that about right? The atmosphere really connects the whole carbon cycle.
Let me
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, but let me correct you on one thing. It's got to be. We got to get this right. It's 280 at the beginning, not 180. 180 parts per million was at the near the end of the last ice advance that it dropped that low.
Yeah, feel free
and
to
so
correct.
It was,
yeah, I want good
in 1800, 1850 was 280. It's minor, but let's get the numbers right. And so we've added 50%. It was 280. We've added about 140. So we're at 420 today, parts per million. And so we've added 50%, and that's a good thing. And in the book, I've not heard anybody else talking about this, but fossil fuels are really a natural solar-powered battery that we're just now tapping.
Oh, interesting.
Because both the coal that we're using, of course, those were trees that were generated by photosynthesis that used the sun power, solar power, and oil and gas is derived from mud, organic-rich muds, mainly fueled by phytoplankton blooms, algal blooms, that bloomed and died and sank to the bottom, bloomed and died, and over hundreds of thousands of years accumulated into these. And so the phytoplankton also use photosynthesis to fuel their growth. So oil and gas and coal are all fueled by the sun, by photosynthesis. And so these are really a big solar-powered battery that's releasing a life-giving beneficial molecule, carbon dioxide. We should celebrate that, not demonize it.
Well, that's my point exactly. Positive message. And people need to know that. They need to know. This is why I don't say fossil fuels anymore. You know, I think of, like, you know, dinosaur bones in the movie Jurassic Park. You're not going to power your 747 on dinosaur bones. That's not what we're talking about here. It's organic compounds, phytoplankton, algae blooms, and everything accumulated over, you know, possibly millions of years, but they've locked up all that carbon dioxide. And here's a revelation I had that I think you might find interesting, that the internal combustion engine uses hydrocarbons, right? So organic fuels are hydrocarbons, and they combine with oxygen in your engine, carburetor, fuel injector. So hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen burn. The carbon, the bonds break, releasing energy, powers your vehicle, and what comes out of the tailpipe is CO2 and H2O. So it's water vapor and carbon dioxide. Now back in the 60s, your big Chevy Impalas, spewed out a lot more junk, nitrogen monoxide, sulfur monoxide, and that created the nitrous, nitric acid and sulfuric acid. That's where the acid rain came from. But we took all that stuff out of the cars. So now it's mostly carbon dioxide and oxygen, and those are good things. And it's interesting that a carbohydrate, the food that we eat, is the same compounds, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And our body burns it and creates energy. And we breathe out carbon dioxide and water vapor.
Oh, yeah.
What's the difference?
We're carbon-based life. Yeah, we're carbon-based life forms for sure. And it's one of the primary needed molecules, along with oxygen, water, and carbon dioxide are the three most needed. The other thing, burning of fossil fuels, I find this in my book. I write about this. CO2, as and your listeners know, is driving plant growth and crop growth. Right. It's also being driven by several other things. The warming of the earth, be contributing up to maybe 5 or 8% of the crop growth because it's leading to longer growing seasons. Also, there is nitrogen released in the burning of fossil fuels. And that's leading to an increase in nitrogenous, and I learned this as I was going through, some 8% of the crop growth and vegetation growth around the world is because there's more nitrogen available for plants. And there's a lot of nitrogen in the air, but this nitrogen is easily accessible to plants, because the only way plants can get it is through their root system and bacteria that break it down, nodules and such. So I'm really, really thankful and really happy with how this book has turned out. We'll be releasing it. It should be available the end of October.
Come by Pensacola for a book signing, let me know, because that's where I am. I'm in Milton, next to Pensacola, Florida.
So. Well, I'm in Wymama. My home is Wymama County.
Where's that?
So, which is down south of Tampa.
Oh, okay. Oh, you moved.
I did.
Yeah.
I'm now in the free state of Florida. But one thing I just learned last night, I was watching the debate, and I learned that Ron DeSantis, I don't go political, but it was very disappointing to hear that a year ago he was backing, or 2 years ago as it was, but he was backing a ban on fracking. I hadn't heard that. I'm going to document that. But Doug Burgum probably had the best line of the debate last night when he said that the true existential threat are the policies of the Biden administration to try and stop a non-existent climate crisis. And that's exactly right. That's the existential threat we're facing.
Yeah, I didn't know what that meant. I had to look it up. It's a threat to your existence. People, they throw that phrase around like crazy. I didn't watch that. I watched the Trump speech, and it was fascinating because he was talking about electric cars and losing the jobs. That's where I had the comment about the car companies and all those other associated companies. They should make this a positive, that releasing carbon is good. Buy a V8, save your country.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they doing this? Let's talk about the evil side of this. I've heard, all climate change leads to communism. You look at the climate change plans, you look at smart growth in the 90s, you look at all this stuff, it's all the same thing. Getting rid of the single family home, getting rid of the passenger vehicle, coordinating people into, little 15-minute cities that the government can control. Why? Other than their own power, is there any reason you can think of why this big push for green energy, for trying to get rid of the carbon that saves our lives, why are they doing this?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot. I'll tell you what I tell everybody is I got just most of my interviews I do, and I do a lot, I get asked that at some point. And I got to tell you, I don't know. I can guess, but I'll tell you, I can't see inside men's and women's souls to see what their motivation is. But I am a scientist. My job is to tell you this is what they're telling you, and here's what the truth is. And you know, you, Greg, and all of your listeners are just as qualified as I am to say why they're doing it, aren't you? You might be more qualified than I am to say why they're doing it. You know, I hear control, power, funding, money. Some people say it's that these people are trying to get rid of and collapse Western civilization and capitalism. I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of all these things. But what we do know is that your listeners are being lied to, and they're being lied to on a daily and hourly basis about the dangers of carbon dioxide and global warming. In my new book, I explore one of my favorite subjects, which is the correlation between the rise and fall of temperature and the rise and fall of civilizations. And what we find is that looking back over the last 5,000 or so years to the first great civilizations, the other three warming periods were always correlated to just hugely beneficial effects to mankind. During the warm periods that were much warmer than today, great civilization empires rose up. And we saw that the first great one was the Minoan warm period, the Bronze Age. And that was the time of the Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, and the Indus River Valley. It was the great Harappan empire and civilization that rose up there. All of these prospered. Food was bountiful. Again, it was a lot warmer than it is today.
How warm was it? Do you know how warm it was? 120, 130 degrees? How warm was it? Can you measure that?
Well, we know from historical records. We have some of the what we call proxy data that can give us a relative amounts. But if we look at – I like to use historical data because people understand that better than carbon – oxygen isotopes versus, you know, C14. Nobody understands that. But if I tell you that they were growing a crop called millet in Scandinavia that can only be grown today in subtropical regions, it had to have been a lot warmer because they're growing millet in Scandinavia. So it was at least 2 degrees centigrade, which is 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer at that time. In that area. Then it started getting cold, and it got cold pretty quickly. And they think within maybe 50 or 100 years, all of those civilizations collapsed and empires, with the exception of the old Egypt kingdom. And they barely survived by the skin of their teeth. But all the great civilizations collapsed at the same time as they were going into their cold period. And we see that that's repeated time and time again throughout history. Warm good, cold bad. Every single major cooling period was associated with crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. Things were really bad during those times, and we need to let people know that. History tells us, welcome the warmth and fear the cold.
That'd be a great meme that we could share, and you could just document, you know, the warming periods of the Hittites and the cooling periods of the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, and the plague, and the warming period of the Renaissance. I'm pretty sure the Renaissance was warming period, right? So that was like 1500s?
Yeah. I'm not sure when the Renaissance was. The medieval warm period was the height of the Middle Ages.
Okay.
And so that was great time. That was, again, food was bountiful, several or 500 years of warming, and then it got cold into the Little Ice Age, which was we have great records of the Little Ice Age that stretched from 1250 to maybe 1850, 500 years of cold.
Right, those are dark times.
Conquest
wars.
And it was a lot. It was a lot colder. For example, if you go to Mount Vernon today, George Washington's home. He built an ice house. Martha Washington loved to have ice in her drinks for the summer. And so they would go down to the Potomac, and he'd have his enslaved workers cut blocks of ice out of the thick ice on the Potomac and bring it up to, it happened every year. So this, right. But it only happens. I think the last time it froze over like that once in the 1980s, and you know, it's just an extremely rare occurrence today. But back in Washington's time,
Thames in London, they were ice skating on the Thames, you know, back in the 1800s. You don't do that anymore,
right? And that hasn't. Yeah. And that, well, the last event like that was 1820, and so we know it was very cold and it was very deadly. During that, this most recent cold period, the Little Ice Age, up to a third of the population of the world perished during that time. Again, it's because of crop failure. And we go, you know, I got to tell you, I always laugh. We talked about the Babylonians, the Hittites, the Assyrians that all collapsed. And my late mother-in-law used to tell me, she loved history. She says, if you want to tell a joke and not offend anybody, you started out by two Hittites walked into a bar, all right? Because nobody's seen a Hittite in 3,000 years. There have been Hittites for thousands of years. And
that's funny.
Whenever I hear Hittites, I remember her telling me that.
Yeah, two Babylonians, two, you know, passed by a pub. Usually it's Irish, but anyway, that's a different story. Fact number 14 from your website, co2coalition.org. When the next ice age descends upon us, it will be a true climate apocalypse accompanied by crop failures, famine, mass immigration from colder to warmer regions, and unprecedented population loss. What's the latest on the end of this warming and interglacial versus, you got another thing here, glacial warming periods. I'll ask you about that in a bit, but what's the bad news? Is it inevitable?
Oh, it's inevitable. It's just, when is it going to occur? We can't stop. These huge events are unstoppable, and that's right. what we should be preparing. We shouldn't be preparing for unprecedented warming that's going to lead to catastrophes. If that was going to happen, why haven't we seen some indication of that by now? So we might be headed into one right now for all we know. It might not come for 50 or 100 years, maybe a little longer, but it's going to come. And when it does, it won't be as bad as the previous cold periods, because we're not moving food around by ox cart and we have refrigeration, but you're still going to have, you can't prevent the crop failure that they saw. And that's what we should be preparing for. And yet, one other thing that's fascinating to me is the sea level rise we hear about. Just 2 weeks ago, the island nations around the world banded together for a lawsuit in The Hague. They were suing the wealthy Western countries for climate reparations because they were all going to be underwater. Okay.
Oh, please.
So it was the island of the Maldives is listed as the United Nations as the most at-risk island because the highest point is 14 feet above sea level.
Oh,
and
wow.
Sea level's rising. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how fast is it rising? 7 inches a year, okay? And they say they're going to be underwater in a couple of decades. Well, 15,000 years ago, those islands were also just above sea level. And in that time period, sea level has risen 400 feet, okay? So they're going to say they tell us they're going to be underwater by 2050. Well, by 2050, sea level will rise approximately 2 inches, okay? So think about this. The last 400 feet of sea level rise didn't put the islands underwater. But that next 2 inches, look out, brother. These islands, the reason they're growing, it's a geologic process known as accretion, where the islands actually, as storms come in, they wash gravels and sands and the crushed corals up onto the island. And the island grows. And that's why these islands have – you've not heard that, have you?
No, this is interesting.
These islands? Yeah, so these islands, we've seen 400 feet of sea level rise in the last 15,000 years. But here we are.
Yeah,
they're none of them underwater.
Interesting. Let me. I got a couple of questions on some more recent phenomena.
And then I have to go at the bottom of the hour.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sort of gearing up for that. I pretty much asked the big questions already just to make sure of those. And we've talked about books and videos and anything else we need to talk about. Make sure, just let me know. We'll get contact information before you're gone. But hurricanes. the climate, you know, misinformers or the climate disinformation bureau, let's call them that, have said, well, the increase in climate change is causing more hurricanes. We've had one this year, and it was a bad one. I'm not, you know, taking away from that, but this has been a pretty calm year for hurricanes. What do you think?
Yeah, there are indications that actually warming, and we're in a warming trend, actually adds instability to the upper higher atmosphere that really disrupts these tornadoes. We are seeing a warming of the seas, but we're not seeing more tornadoes. In fact, the best way, if you want to look at tornadoes for the United States or really anywhere, look for landfalling hurricanes. Look for landfalling hurricanes, because we know every single landfalling hurricane that's made landfall in the United States since going back to 1850 or before.
Right.
And using that information, we can state pretty categorically that hurricanes are in slight decline. Landfalling hurricanes have been in decline for 150 plus years. They're not increasing, which is what we're being told. And their intensity, there are claims that there's some intensity increase. Christopher Lancy, who actually, kudos to him, he quit his job at NOAA because he was saying they didn't approve what he was saying. He was telling the truth, and they were censoring him, and he said, no, thank you, and he walked away. But according to his data, he said there might be a 1% increase in the intensity of storms. Okay, let's say he's right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a hurricane that comes on. Hurricane Gregory makes landfall. I don't think you're going to know the difference if Hurricane Gregory is at 120 miles per hour or 121 miles per hour. It's not really going to make a big difference, a 1% increase in intensity. And it's not even sure that we're sure that he's actually correct. But again, to his credit, we've launched a new education initiative at the CO2 Coalition. I'm so proud of what we've done. You can learn more at co2learningcenter.com, co2learningcenter.com. We have wonderful comics. These are science-based books and videos that are there. Science-based videos, science-based books that are easy to read. They're entertaining. They're done manga and anime style. And importantly, we have lesson plans that go along with these. These lesson plans were done by Dr. Sharon Camp, who has a PhD in analytic chemistry. She's an AP science teacher and reader. She's developed these lesson plans for homeschoolers and charter schools, whoever wants to use them. They've gotten great reviews. So you can get the material at co2learningcenter.com. We've got a lot more coming out related to that.
No, that's really important. I was just going to ask you about the homeschool. If you can tie them with the homeschool networks, you know, in all the states and the school choice folks, to this should be part of a curriculum. You know, if you can make this every bit of part of a curriculum that the government schools are teaching exactly the opposite, this is really good. And anything that can, you know, we need to normalize CO2. We need to not have this be, you know, be the exception, be the outlying scientist saying one thing and everybody else is saying something else. We need to make them be the folks that are completely wrong and demonize, you know, these people who are lying about the climate. I just, one more question if I can, real quick, and then we'll get contact information. Dr. John Clauser, I saw you talk about him on One American News. Tell me about that. What happened with him?
Well, we recruited him to join the CO2 Coalition. He now sits on our board of directors. He's the current Nobel laureate, 2022 Nobel laureate in physics. And interestingly, after he accepted his award, pocketed the check, and then he told the committee how wrong they were for awarding the past Nobel Prize to these climate models who weren't physicists, and they got the climate modeling wrong. And he lectured them that, and then he was honored at the White House by Joe Biden for winning the Nobel being a Nobel laureate. And afterwards, he shook Joe Biden's hand. He said, "Sir, your science that you're using for energy and climate policy is just wrong." And Joe told him, he says, "You're just spouting right-wing science." So Joe Biden's lecturing the Nobel laureate in physics on science. Yeah,
that's fine.
That's Joe.
But this is interesting.
So John's been outspoken. Yeah. He's been entirely outspoken. He went to Quantum Korea for quantum physics conference, and he talked to the students there. One of the things that's really resonated, he just stated firmly, there is no climate crisis. And he called the IPCC one of the greatest sources of misinformation out there. He's not holding back at all.
I love it. It's the bottom of the hour. I know you probably have another interview to do, but thank you so much for coming on the show again. Do you want to give your contact information one more time? And then I promise to get you out of here now.
Okay, so we've got CO2 Learning Center, or excuse me, CO2Coalition.org. My new book you can look at is convenientwarming.com, convenientwarming.com. It will be available hopefully end of October. But you can learn a little bit more about it if you go to that website.
Gregory Wrightstone, thank you so much. Let's give you another round of applause. Keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Bye now. Thank you, Gregory. Take care. Bye now. Yeah, it's things get pretty critical time-wise, and so he is very busy and doing a lot more interviews. Pianki, let's make your line live a little bit. I'm going to take a break in a couple minutes, huh? But just initial reaction. I think we covered everything. I mean, we might have missed the thing on the slowing of the Earth, but I didn't really feel we had enough time to justify that given the time available. But that was a lot of good information. I had no idea about the islands, you know, accreting, you know, building themselves up. Priyanka, have you heard that before? Let's see if we can get him back in here. Unmute. He's unmuted on my end. He's probably muted on his end. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me take another break here, play a couple more things that I have to play. And then it is now 8:31, and then we got CJ joining us at the top of the hour. So let's see what I haven't played yet. Let's go here. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener.
It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, working on it. We don't have a climate change bill, though. Strangely enough, it's the one area that we don't have a lot of. I should talk to Gregory about that. He's busy enough, but maybe someone on his staff, we can have a climate change policy change or some kind of thing. But in fact, we were working before with one of our previous hosts, reporters, on an electric car bill, including electric car tax, equivalent to like the gas tax, it'd be like a voltage tax, my idea was a hazmat on the battery and things like that. But electric cars, really, there's nothing good that comes out of them. So I don't understand, other than power and control, is to put everything under electricity, because then the government can regulate everything. That's my thought. Is that if your car is electric, your house is electric, your stove is electric, your light bulbs are what they want, pretty soon they're going to get rid of the gas grill. That was my next speculation. They're going to go after barbecues. You go after barbecues, you got a problem with America. Okay? America's like to grill, all right? But why not? It's gas. It's anything that's organic fuel. And this is something that Gregory pointed out that I think is critical, is that this is natural. This is solar power. Solar power plus photosynthesis plus carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, the building blocks of life. When we're burning organic fuels, we're basically replacing what the sun created. We're just maintaining the carbon cycle. And I really think that's where they should put the emphasis, is talking about how good this is, how it's a good thing to replace carbon dioxide, how we can use a lot more of it, how it's no problem. Now, if you could take out the other pollutants, take out the pollutants from burning hydrocarbons, the nitrogens, I guess, are pretty good. He was talking about nitrogen in the air, but in a form that the plants can use. That has to get underground, so that's different. But take all the stuff that was bad. In fact, they did that. Catalytic converters and cleaner fuels and other things like that have taken out most of the bad stuff that comes out of the tailpipe, back in the 60s. Although I love those cars, but that's another story. You can smell the difference. I got passed by a 1972 Dodge Dart the other day, and we used to own one back in 1972 when we first got to this country. And I remember that the aroma of the exhaust, because there's a lot more stuff in it, because it did not take out the chemicals. Now, there aren't enough 1972 Dodge Darts around to worry about in terms of polluting the air. But the fact is that once they stopped releasing all the bad stuff, you don't hear about acid rain anymore. There's a reason. Because the chemicals that made acid rain are not coming out the tailpipes anymore. There's a reason you don't hear about a lot of other pollutants, about the buildings turning brown and, all the different, and ruining the statues. Well, statues are being taken down. But, there used to be a big problem with pollution was changing the face of the buildings and, turning all the copper statues green and doing all kinds of that. You don't hear about that anymore because the stuff's taken out of the tailpipes. So you can have clean, organic. Go ahead, Pianki. Yeah, go ahead.
The exhaust gases out of cars today is hotter than what they were today. That's why they put catalytic converters on them. A catalytic converter keeps the exhaust gases coming out of the manifold hotter in order to burn off more of the raw gases. That's why you don't see cars going down emitting black smoke like it used to.
Yeah, that was my next question, was what do they actually do? So a catalyst is something that creates a reaction. You put salt in water, it boils faster because the ions of salt, the sodium and the chloride ions, produce a reaction faster. So that's why people put salt in water. They don't know why, but that's what happens. So a catalytic converter, what does it do in a car? It converts, pollutants to like inorganic things or innocuous things by extra heat.
The gases are hotter and therefore you burn up more stuff rather than emitting it out the back end.
So now are cars better about not having as much unburned fuel? Because, you know, a carburetor is incredibly inefficient. You know, so it would be wasting. You have gasoline coming out the tailpipe. It's gasoline vapor. That's a lot of what you're smelling. But so now that you're saying,
well,
that's being burnt now?
If you're driving down the highway at a constant speed, it's fine. But when you're driving in cities where you on the gas, off the gas, where that transition doesn't happen immediately, it takes time. So that's why you have a lot of gas is unburned fuel, even no matter how efficient the fuel systems are, you still going to have that.
Yeah. So do hybrids make sense in town? Because they seem to, for me, you know, like I say, I have to think about the fact, you know, you're saying that there's really nothing good about the hybrids either. Aren't they a more efficient and better way of transporting in a city where it is stop and go all the time? So they can use that energy?
Well, I never studied hybrids that much, Rick.
Okay. Well, here's how I understand it. The braking action charges the battery. It's like a dynamo. So the resistance, so when you put the brake on a hybrid, there's like a dynamo that uses that extra power to charge the battery. So as you're decelerating, you're charging the battery. As you're accelerating, you're using the electric motor to get going, and then at some point the gasoline motor kicks in. So you're still burning gasoline, but you're burning, you know, a third, maybe as or a half to a third as much as you'd burn in a regular car. And when the hybrid gets to a light, it just shuts off. And then when you hit the electric motor, it starts again.
Well, you
then
know,
when
the greatest
gasoline.
Example of that is
uh-huh.
The greatest example of that is probably diesel locomotives.
Uh-huh.
They have the engine turns a generator that operates motor electric motors that turn the wheels. But they still have to have those 1,000-gallon tanks.
Right, because you got to power the generator. Yeah, the cruise ships do that now. The cruise ships are all electric motors, but they're powered by diesel generators. And they still have smoke coming out the funnel. You know, so but they used to have coal back in the old days, the Titanic. They had coal fired, which is really inefficient. They shovel coal into the boilers. Ugh. You know, I'm sure it's a short lifespan.
You know, when ships come into port, they have mechanisms that they contain that exhaust compared to what it was before.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
But when
they're
out in the open, nothing you can do out there in the wide open space, ocean spaces.
But it doesn't matter either. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, because that stuff we thought was so bad. But again, I'm sure there's a catalytic converter equivalent, you know, so you're not spewing raw fuel from the engines, from the diesel generators. But, you know, the ships today are incredible.
Now diesel engines, don't use spark plugs.
Right.
They obtain the heat by compression. So when the piston comes up and compresses the air temperature gets up to a certain temperature, then it squirts some diesel fuel in there. It ignites and explodes and pushes the piston back down. And that's transferred into rotation to turn the wheels.
Yeah, so diesel, I'm not as familiar with diesel, but let's talk about that for a minute because I find it fascinating that you look at the trucks use diesel, the trains use diesel, the ships use diesel for their generators now, but they used to use diesels for the engines. You know, so you know, Mr. Diesel, you know, over in Germany who invented or came up with the fuel, how is diesel fuel different from gasoline? What do they do differently with it? Do you know?
You get more power out of diesel than you do gasoline. That gasoline is highly volatile. So a lot goes up in evaporation and so on. You can get pre-ignition. But you can't get that out of diesel because diesel engine compresses the air to a greater extent, causing the temperature to rise. Then you eject some diesel fuel in there and causes an explosion. And those is repeated.
But it's a slower acting fuel. Like gasoline is more immediate. You know, if you have a gasoline, you know, pickup truck next to a diesel pickup truck, the gasoline truck's going to beat it. But the diesel truck's going to be more efficient over the long haul. So it takes a little spool up time.
The diesel don't have the chemicals in it that gasoline does. You know, you could and see around this time of the year, the refinery starts switching over and start putting additives in gasoline that will permit it to operate better in your colder regions, like up north. Now, with diesel fuel will jellify in real cold weather. So you have to have heaters, electrical heat. For instance, at nighttime, when you're not using a diesel engine, you have to plug it in to provide heat.
Right.
To keep the crankcase heated up so that when you go to start it up, it'll turn over.
We used to do that with airplanes. When I learned to fly in New England, when it was, sub-zero temperatures, they had preheat. So they'd blast warm air into the engine to warm up the oil so it would actually move. And then we could start the engines, So, I never want to live in a place again where I have to have preheat for the engine. I'm sorry. It's just too cold. Chipping an airplane.
And another thing with gasoline, on real hot days, you get what's called a fuel locks. In other words, the gas in the line, vapor lock.
Vapor
lock. The gas in the line will vaporize into a vapor. And that's why you have to sit there for a while and rev your engine to get that vapor out of your lines. If not, the car stall. In the newer engines, I haven't had too much experience with that. But
I don't think fuel injected engines get a vapor lock because they don't have the same lines.
Yeah, they
do. You got lines
run from the tank.
Huh.
And along the line, the concrete radiates heat up and heats the lines up, and thus you have a little vapor. My car does that now.
Yeah, interesting.
When I first saw the story on a hot day.
Yeah, you're in a colder climate. I like being in Florida. Well, it was interesting. The as much as we're optimistic about carbon dioxide, the idea that when this warming period ends, some of the more in-depth questions we talk about, if there's anything good that the globalists are doing in their own mind, if they think they reduce the population, then we're not going to have that apocalypse when the world actually does cool. And I don't know if they're looking that far ahead or they're just, taking away our carbon dioxide because they want to kill people anyway, because they want a smaller population so they can manage it. So I'm not sure. And again, Gregory says, you can't look into their hearts and souls and know why they're doing what they're doing. But what's interesting is everybody is asking that same question. That was the most interesting to me. So people are questioning. People are like, climate change stuff you keep bragging about, I don't see it. Yeah, things are fine, especially this year.
These things will change because there's natural things that the Earth do in its precession.
Right.
The poles shift a little bit one way. You know that yourself. But and you're flying. But these things happen. And they have gotten into the pattern that it is in order to then all of a sudden along comes life that adapts to it. But, present life haven't been around that long to see the natural changes that the Earth go through. Just because life come along don't mean that Earth is going to stop going through its natural changes. And at some point in time, life is going to, it's going to have to step aside. That's just the way it is.
Well, and think about that. This would be a good time to be looking for other planets or having a natural, reduction in the population. Because if we see this coming, and it may take, like you said, a couple hundred years or several thousand years, that's kind of it. Anyway, we don't have to worry about it. But a few generations down the way, they might have to worry about it if it comes, earlier. Like I say, it's a 10 to 15,000 year cycle. So we have, from now until the next, 4,000 years approximately. So anytime within that time, things could cool down. If they start cooling down, the ice is going to be forming from the North Pole South and the South Pole North. And the Earth is, the populations are going to gradually compress closer and closer to the equator. That's part of the reason I moved to Florida. Was that I heard about this and I heard things are going to get cooler. The last thing I wanted to be is in a crowded California Bay Area with things getting cooler and shortages. I don't want to be here. I want to be where there's growing, where there's farms, where there's, so I went to small town Florida, although it's getting bigger now. But that's part of the reason I moved here, was to get away from a big
city all those things,
and get to a warmer part of the country. Yeah.
Yeah, all those things is they happen. Like I may mention, when you build cities with tall, large buildings, you're turning in an atmosphere, and it does slow down the rotation of the Earth. It's just natural. And if you just slow it down, the areas are going to be exposed to the sun longer than what they was much, much, much previously. So that there is a natural thing.
Yeah. I want to see a source on that. I'd be really curious because...
You know what a source is? You ever watch an ice skater?
Yeah.
When they're twirling, when their arms are out, they twirl slow. When they want to speed up, they bring their arms across in toward their chest.
Right.
There's no resistance. So they spin
right.
like a... They spin fast.
Well, it's also no centrifugal force.
Oh, I'll tell you something else, too. Mountain ranges, they cause the earth to slow down a little bit.
Well, see, now this is a curiosity to me. So, and the reason I'm asking about that is things slow down because of air resistance. But if the air is moving at the same speed as the earth is, the atmosphere is turning with the earth. This is what
I'm
questioning.
No, you're flowing in there. The air is not moving. The air is, you got different levels up at, it's 80,000 feet, 60,000 feet. You may have air currents going one direction. You come down, they go another direction.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
90-degree difference.
East
Coriolis.
Yeah, so,
yeah, Coriolis changes the
right.
direction like 90 degrees up to several thousand feet. Oh, yeah. So the winds are changing. But what I'm saying is, yeah, that's true, too. That makes an interesting effect. That, like I say, I'm looking for I'm looking for graphs and charts and some kind of a source. Like I said, it's not that I don't believe you. I want to get more information on this because I'm thinking if the atmosphere is moving with the Earth, then the air is stable above a place except for the high and low pressure areas in the wind. So and that's independent of gravity. That's pressure difference. But the gravity is holding the atmosphere over the Earth. You know, it's like the difference between airspeed and ground speed, right? So, 747 flying at 600 knots, you know.
You know what causes airflow, don't you?
Through the air.
The sun.
Right. Well, yeah, heating and cooling, rising and falling air.
So when the sun uh-huh. rises in the east, right?
Uh-huh.
So when the sun rises in the east, it can cause convection current upward, mm-hmm. which creates a low pressure area that causes air on the west to move toward that.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth
yep.
is turning from east to west, but the air is going from west to east.
Oh, no, and I agree with you, yeah. So the sun heats the Earth, and certain areas cause air to rise. Well, if air rises one place, it descends at the place that's cooler. Well, the air that descends then moves to the air that's rising. That's called wind. And then the air up top.
It moves in
rising,
to replace that low
yeah.
pressure.
Right. And then
if
then
you
the
didn't
top
do
air,
that, people's ears would burst, and they... And then they have human beings would have problems if you didn't maintain that 15 pounds per square inch.
Yeah. I thought it was 14. Maybe it's 14 point something. All right, let's just say 15.
Yeah, 14. Right at
yeah, somewhere in there, yeah. But you listen to Gregory. So we might as well get our numbers right. It's kind of worn off on me. Anyway.
That's why when temperatures get up around
yeah.
100, and you know, when your thermal, when you put a mm-hmm. thermometer in your body and your temperature is started getting up around 108, you did. 98.6 is normal.
Yeah, well, this one answered the question about how warm was it. And I don't know if he sort of said like 2 to 3 degrees, you know, Celsius warmer. Well, that's like 5, you know, to 8 degrees Fahrenheit. Maybe let's just say 5 degrees. So in other words, so we're talking about a difference of only 5 degrees, you know, between the Hittites and the Bronze Age. And the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, you know, where the brave knights would beat each other to death and fall down, you know, and the plague and everything else that was happening, the oppressions, the feudalism, the whole bit. So in the dark times of human history, we're only talking about a 5 degree temperature difference. That's fascinating. In
yeah.
the morning, in the morning, if the summers were longer and the winters shorter, but he says the growing seasons were longer, which means the summers had to be longer. So that's interesting. So how did, you know, I'm just curious. I mean,
in those areas, they have more growing periods. You know, in Africa, you may have 3 growing periods, whereas here in the United States, you have basically 1.
Yeah. Well, where are the big agricultural centers of Africa? Which countries really grow lots of produce? Are they mostly the southern?
And wherever there's rivers. The Nile River was a fertile. The Tigris Euphrates was fertile. Fertile Crescent, they call them.
That's Middle East, though. That was Iraq. What's now Iraq was Mesopotamia. Tigris and Euphrates flow through there. That's the Babylon. She were going way back. But see, now he knows about some of these ancient civilizations. That's more your province too. So if you ever get a chance to I'd love to know some of like a timeline of the ancient civilizations. And we should do a timeline of the temperature. There probably is one. I'm sure.
And they go way back. There's some where you have this, what we call the Sphinx. It hasn't rained in those areas in 15,000 years, so they say.
Wow.
I've been in people's homes in southern Egypt around Aswan where you go in the living room, it's open to the sky, and there's no roof because it never rains.
Wow. Do you have you seen on the Action Radio Environmental Project? I found a picture of Cairo on somewhere.
I don't know if that picture is accurate. Yeah,
it might not be, but it's just kind of interesting. I made a joke about our own Santa Rosa County commissioners want our county to look like that. You know, in other words, all developed, no trees, no nothing. But one of my friends said, "Well, wait a minute, it never rains here. There's no water." I said, "Cairo is on the Nile. You know, it's on the Nile Delta. It's one of the most fertile places on the planet. So if they don't have any water in Cairo, it's my choice. You know, it's because they don't have any irrigation.
If you fly over that area and you along the Nile." From the Nile back in may go 10 miles, maybe even not that far, where it's green. That's because it's where farmers irrigate. They divert the flow of the river.
Right.
And they use that to irrigate their crops. Now, you go beyond that, you're in deserts.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Nile does not evaporate before it gets to the ocean. It has to be the Mediterranean?
It empties into the Mediterranean.
Okay. All right. Interesting. You know, why doesn't the Suez Canal dry up? It can't be that deep. Or maybe it does. Maybe they have to maintain
the
water.
Well, the Suez Canal is man-made. Matter of fact, the engineer that designed it designed the Panama Canal. And that's why kind of the Moses story is fictitional. Because if it was during his period, there wouldn't have been no Suez Canal. So why would he have to part the Red Sea when he could have walked about another 20 miles north and walked around in dry land?
That's a Wendy question. I will defer to Wendy on that one. Yeah. So we need our biblical scholar on that kind of stuff. But
I don't like to debate them. Let them have their show.
Okay, that's fine. Well, no, and you'll notice that I don't, encourage. I encourage debate, but not argumentative or unnecessarily. There's certain people I don't put together at the same show. I'm not going to put Josie and Bianca on the same hour. I'm just not. That would not be pretty.
Yeah.
Because they're,
The word he was supposed to cross, the depth is about over 2,000 feet. And the width of the water, the width of the sea at that point. Well, a slope to come out of the bottom where they would have been leveled, which wouldn't have lasted long because they would have to start another slope to get back up to dry to the land.
Uh-huh.
And horses can't do that.
Well,
horses
are
not
going
to go down. Horses can only go down a slope so much pulling a wagon because the wagon will run over.
Yeah. I remember the I remember reading somewhere that the sea was the Reed Sea, that they had reeds that were parted, not water. So they had to go around reeds. Now, I don't know how much truth there is. I don't know where. It's just something that sparked in my memory.
Grow out in the middle of the river.
Well, that's what I was thinking. They were on the shore.
If that's the case, the reed would have to be as tall as 100 feet or more, and then it just don't have.
Yeah. Well, and this is something, too, that things that are talked about in the Bible. The idea of Noah's, 800 years old? I find that hard to believe. Putting all the animals, on one ark, I find that hard to believe. And I'm wondering how much of it's, again, not to offend Wendy, but how much is metaphorical?
Covered,
how much, yeah.
If water covered everything on Earth, what's the elevation of
Mount Everest?
Mount Everest.
32,000 feet.
Okay, so if water was, and water seeks its own level, that means water all around the earth would have to be at least that deep. Okay, if that's the case, what's the temperature at the elevation of Mount Everest?
Oh, it's cold. It's frozen. So
about 30 below zero.
Well, or more.
So his boat would need ice skates.
So you're saying that the ark was an ice boat?
Well, the whole earth would have been a block of ice.
Okay, but if it was the 32,000 feet, there's no oxygen up there. Everybody would have died.
There's no oxygen up there either. You lose your oxygen around 8,000 feet.
Yeah, so now we got a problem.
Started getting bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. So how much of the earth was – so here's a question. Oh, this would be a great question for Wendy. So how much of the earth had to be flooded for life to be sustained?
Well, it would have been the whole earth. See, the water seeks its own level.
Right.
Sea level in off the west coast of – east coast of Africa, the same sea level as it is off of the coast of Miami. It seeks its own level.
Right.
Right?
So
what would the drinking water?
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been frozen. They didn't have no insulated ships.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so
it would have been salt water.
Yep.
And they didn't have no insulated ships. So if they had to carry water on the drink, then you're taking up space for an animal. And how did the poor old turtles, North American turtles, turtle make it there in time to catch the boat?
Well, so the sea animals weren't on the ark, so all the sea critters were doing fine, and the fish in the lakes, unless it was frozen, were doing fine.
Well,
but the question is how much water would have to be generated to allow for the flood, you know, where all life was put on one ark. I mean, it's an interesting question, you know, and we like to
turtles wouldn't have been able to crawl that fast. The sloths,
yeah,
you know, those animals that you know, they were giant sloths too. They like slow motion, man. It take them forever across the street.
I've seen the smiles. They have smiles on their face, too. Like, I get CJ in the line. she's like, CJ said, going, what are these people talking about? This is what happens. If you don't catch the show, you never know where we're going to go. All right, we're going to change
the completely. What about the dinosaurs? The Rexes? What are they going to get along okay with the elephants?
Well, I guess, no, the Noah had to be after the dinosaurs. It gets interesting, doesn't it? All right, we've had 2 hours of climate change plus everything else. Let's get to CJ.
What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything. And they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative health care, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with CJ, because this is CJ's Wellness Watch on Action Radio.
Yeah, you're going to have to save us from 2 hours of climate change. We were kind of climate changed out. It's been fun, though. Hi, CJ.
Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if you got a chance to check us out here. The first hour was Pianchi and I going through the CO2 Coalition website, and then we were fortunate enough to have Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition at the top of the last hour. And so he only had 30 minutes. These big stars, they only give us 30 minutes, and they have to go, like, you know, do another interview with, you know, some major mega corporation. But, it was good. It was fun. So check the podcast. Which leads to a question I just thought of. Since we're talking about climate change, you might as well keep my theme going. Climate and health. You know, are people healthier in colder or warmer climates? I mean, I know you weren't expecting this. I know this is totally out of the blue. We're just going to speculate outrageously. But if you think about it, are people more prone to, say, being overweight in northern climates where it's colder and they're less active, wearing more clothes so they can hide it? It's not like bikini season. Whereas someplace like Florida, you know, where everybody's on a boat, you know, for half the year wearing swimsuits. Do warmer climates promote health? We know it's healthier for the people overall because of food production and knowledge and society and things like that. But how about actual health?
That's a great question. And that has so many different variables to it. It's a great conversation. So I don't really think that there's one general answer to that. I do think warmer climates, right? Like you said, people are out getting more vitamin D. They're typically more active, right?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, really a stereotypical statement, but and I you know, it's funny that you just brought that up, because I was just thinking this morning, like, praise God, like, to the best of my knowledge, like, I'm totally fine, I'm not sick, I'm not whatever, but I just, you know, I've been in such warm climates here over the past, I mean, I'm in North Carolina, but I've been, you know, doing some traveling to the beaches and been out in the sun and in the heat, you know, and that's my jam. I like the hot weather.
And December.
I've gotten a little bit more like fall here in the morning. It's like I'm waking up and I have a little bit of a runny nose and I'm going outside. And, you know, in North Carolina, it's a little different than, I think, Florida, where, you know, this morning I have on a sweatshirt and sweatpants, and then this afternoon I might have shorts on. So
no sweatpants yet here. It's still too cold. It's too hot for that. But you know, are you northern North Carolina? I'm just trying to think. You know, you might be in a different zone.
Yeah, I'm on the outskirts of Charlotte, so I'm almost like central. But I would agree with that. But you know, your body, we go back to that whole adapt word again, right? Your body kind of adapts. So wherever you've been living for X amount of time or wherever you are, and I know that because I have no family here, okay? Basically, it's me and my daughter here. And so my family is in Pennsylvania. And so the three times
cold
a year that I go home, I am freezing. I mean cold, because even here in the Carolinas, if it gets below, if it gets 75 or below, I have to have a sweater on. Like, it's just because my body, I've been here since 1998 in the Carolinas, and so my body has adapted. So, you know, are people healthier or more susceptible to illness in different climates? The stereotypical answer and the common sense answer would be yes, but your body adapts. Like, if you don't travel and you're always where you are, like, you know, and you somewhere once a year or something, your body adapts to that weather. So if you're living, you know, in sub-zero temperatures, that doesn't mean you're going to be sick. Your body has adapted to that. And it actually might be shocking to your body to go to Florida or go to an island where it's going to be, you know, warm. But I think to answer your question, the general answer is yes, you know.
Yeah, I don't function well in the cold. I love the Bay Area. It's actually a desert out there, even though you had 100% humidity, you know, in the summertime because you had all these clouds overhead. But people were really happy with moderate temperatures. So, you know, maybe 70 in Oakland. Oakland is the best climate in the world. 70 degrees in the summer, 60 degrees in the winter. You know, it was amazing, right? So you had this blanket of fog that kept you cool in the summer, and it actually blanketed and kept you warmer in the winter. And so people were, you know, except for the high crime and other stuff like that, but as far as general temperament, it was really good weather to live in. And you get in the hills, you know, just beyond, outside the Bay Area, like Orinda and Lafayette and Concord and Walnut Creek and all these towns, and it's like 120 in the summer and 30 in the winter. So you've got, you know, from a 2-degree temperature variation to, you know, like a 70-degree temperature variation by simply crossing some hills. It's fascinating. How much variation there is. And in the hot places, it's miserable. But yeah, I notice the difference. Like Florida's completely humid. There's no humidity. California, it's 100% humidity, but you don't feel it. It still feels dry. Because even though the air is saturated, there's so much dryness around, you don't feel it. You know, so everybody's breathing well and we're doing fine. But, you know, but it feels really cold sometimes. It's kind of funny. People from Wisconsin, the dry cold would come to the Bay Area. Okay. It'd be 50 degrees in the winter. And I'm doing, you know, boat tours and they're freezing. I said, this is cold in Wisconsin. I said, come on, you guys get 30 below zero. I said, yeah, but it's sunny and clear and there's no wind. It doesn't feel cold. I'm like, oh.
Well, you know, that's like I said, that's interesting you said, because, you know, when I go to warmer climates, which I try to do frequently, is depending on the humidity, like you said, you know, a dry heat, I'm okay in, you know, but if it's humidity and I can't, and I have no breathing challenges per se that I'm aware of, you know, but
you'd know.
A lot of people who live in humid, hot areas, they don't have any problems because their body has adapted, you know, to those living conditions if they're there for 90% of their lives, you know. So for me, I function better in a dry heat because if I can't breathe, forget it. You know, if it's too muggy and whatnot, but some people, it doesn't bother.
Yeah, I'm just the opposite. So, I love humidity. I do much better in humidity, which is why in California, you know, I didn't really travel much around the state in the summertime because it was hot and it was dry. You know, the Sierras are beautiful, but I wouldn't go there because it was completely dry. I mean, it was crispy bone dry, like Arizona dry. And I can't, okay. I can't function. And my body doesn't do that well in that at all. I'm much more comfortable in humidity. And people are like, how do you walk around 100% humidity? Well, you know, open the door, I walk outside and I'm fine. I can do it. So our different body types really do adapt, you know, and some, is there any indication of that? Is it male, female? Is it blood type? Is it genetics? All of the above? What makes people adapt to different climates?
Well, you know, I think, you know, again, I'm not a scientist, but I think what makes sense to me with what I've, a little bit of digging into this, not a whole lot, is you mentioned something about blood. I think blood type has to do with it. And again, I think that your blood, you know, your blood can change. And so not your blood type, but your blood change. And so again, depending on where you've lived or where you are for 90% of your life, your blood and your system and your circulatory system adapt, just like we said. So I believe that yes, blood type plays a role, but the your blood makeup, you know, as we know, can be altered and changed. And so I do think that your blood and your sensitivity and your circulatory, I don't even like using that word, your circulatory system will adapt to where you are most of the time.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
You know,
Pianchi? Yeah, go ahead.
I've been in southern areas in Egypt, Aswan, in some location where the temperature gets up about 140 degrees. When you get off the bus, you can't walk fast. That's why the people in those areas wear a dress called a galabeah that covers their body and they have their head wrapped because it would kill them.
Yeah.
And white individuals cannot survive in those areas because it's just too hot. That's why coming the further north you go, people complexion turns lighter and so on and so on and so on.
Right.
And you know, people off the equatorial areas, their skin is dark because that protects them with high melanin from the ultraviolet rays of the sun. They call it skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we are creatures of who we are. The diet of people in Miami is not going to be the same as the diet of people up in Minnesota. It ain't good for you.
It's far more... Yeah, there's probably more fat in the diet up north, you know, because like the Wisconsin cheese, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, CJ, what do you think? Have you seen dietary changes and, you know, and skin changes about where people live, even in the United States? I mean, you find, I guess, more white folks in Minnesota and more black folks, you know, along the southern parts of the country, I would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Absolutely. But again, I go back to, you know, climate plays a role in everything, you know, as far as health food options available, as far as crops, as far as mindset of the economy and the farmers and different things. So, you know, you can go down 10,000, not rabbit holes, but you can go down 10,000 trails that make sense as to why.
Hmm.
But, yeah, absolutely, demographics and location, you know, do play a role as far as nutritional choices. I like using that word. You know, and what people are eating. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania compared to North Carolina. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, in general, being around the lake area, kind of where I am, you know, there's from the eyes perspective, right? We don't know anybody's body chemistry, but from the eyes perspective, you know, there's a lot of good-looking, really healthy, fit individuals. You know, you go to other demographical regions. Even if you go up to Raleigh, North Carolina, you don't see that sort of physique.
Yep,
you don't
a little technical difficulty
you know.
There. Yeah. Okay. Well, and that's...
I grew up near Pennsylvania Dutch, you know,
right.
And so you had, now granted, there were a lot of Amish around and fresh things and all that, but everything was Pennsylvania Dutch. And so that's not the most healthy, you know, thing. And I grew up Italian. So the further north you go, you know, when I visited my parents and my grandparents' hometown, I don't even think they knew what a salad looked like, you know.
Pasta fazool, yeah.
Exactly. So, So, yes, I think demographics plays a lot into it.
Yeah.
Like I said, but it has to do, too, the crops and the things that are, you know, what people are producing.
I'd be curious about blood type, too, because I remember reading this a while back, the book on your blood type diet, what foods you should eat for certain blood types. I think we've talked about it briefly, but that might be interesting to incorporate into a climate discussion as well. Like, I'm type B, and I'm like the original Caucasian blood type, you know, from the Caucasus Mountains, you know, and so big on dairy, big on, which I don't eat anymore, but dairy I do. And the time that I didn't have dairy, because I thought I was, you know, I didn't want kidney stones, I actually got a kidney stone for not having enough dairy. So it's kind of interesting, but blood types, we should, you know, poke into that sometime too. Feel free.
Yeah, that would be, you know what? That would be a great, you know, I do a lot of roundtables on my podcast. Honestly, that would be a great conversation to have with Dr. Judy or somebody else, you know, and have a couple people. So, I mean, again, just chiming in. I think that would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Okay, so enough about my topics. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I just, like I said, it seems like when we have these, and I'll be more consistent come when I get back from this next trip. You know, I've just been on the road a lot, and I just got back with my podcasting from, you know, Myrtle Beach when I was traveling to do some events, things like that.
Well,
let's hear
about those. Tell me of your travels. Well, tell me of your podcast adventures. What's going on?
Yeah. So, we have so many irons in the fire. Let's see what I want to say. So I just got back from Myrtle Beach. And it had nothing to do with wellness, but, you know, some of your viewers know I have a totally different Patriot podcast on Rumble. And so I was asked to be a part of that and interview some of the speakers there. And it was a faith-based conference. And so it was amazing. So I made a lot of connections. We've got a lot of great interviews set up to do. And so that's going to be coming up in October. I mean, it was amazing. Believe it or not, we actually beat the hurricane. We did have, if we could have gotten it on video, it would have been hysterical. So my business partner and podcast partner, we went together, and she, you know those carts that you roll into your hotel? Well, we were rolling them back and forth from the convention center that we bring, because we had all of our, you know where I'm going with this, we had all of our, like, equipment there, you know, our microphone, our computers, all of our stuff that we had to wheel into the convention center. We had a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And the we didn't get a lot of rain. There was light rain, but the wind was horrific, which was blowing the light rain. And I was blowing around like Mary Poppins. It was hysterical.
CJ weighs about 100 pounds, folks.
And she was like, you know, she called me by my name, you know, not CJ. And she's like, oh, my gosh. She ran across the parking lot. I was literally blowing, because it was blowing those metal carts around. And it was empty when we were wheeling it back, and we had to be outside. Right. And it was literally blowing me back and forth like a snake would. Sizzling.
Okay.
And I was holding
I gotcha.
On for dear life. It was like so the wind was bad. But most of the time we were inside, and we had that, you know, for a couple hours during the day, a little bit overnight, and then when we came home it was totally fine. So we didn't get like the brunt of the hurricane by any means, but it was windy enough to blow my butt around, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I was in Hurricane Sally a few years ago. I've still got the pictures of it, and the water rose about 14 feet. Fortunately, I'm about 30 feet elevation here. So, across that halfway point, I was going to start to get concerned if it was like, you know, coming up Willing Street, which is our main street in town. If the water was going to up to the main street, it's like, okay, I'm out of here. But you don't have to go that far away. That's a weird thing. It's like 20, 30 miles. As long as you're out of the storm surge, you're good. You know, the wind's going to be windy anyway, but that's the key. So people think about, if you have to evacuate, they're 150, 200 miles. Now, 30. Just get away from any source of water and you're good. But it's really interesting.
Right.
But, so any you want to do some shameless name dropping? Anybody you got to talk to?
Yeah, I can, and then I can move on to some other things. But,
sure.
And you know, believe it or not, before I drop name drop, because, again, I will be – interviewing, I did little snippets, you know, 15, 20-minute interviews with people. And the Wi-Fi was not all that great there. So what my tech person is trying to do, because I am not the tech person, is unfortunately we're going to have to scrap the actual video but keep the audio. And so because the audio came through very, very clear. So we're going to try to blend the snippets together to launch them onto my network on Rumble. But I would say more than all of them that I spoke to, I don't like using the word conspiracy, but they're all into the know, K-N-O-W. They all know, like they listen to different truthers. They listen to the real, they listen to what some people would call the real news. They listen to the conspiracy theories. Like they're very knowledgeable as to, you know, they're not just pastors or people that have blinders on and they're just focused on that. And so the conversations and the interviews that I did, the 15-20 minute increments were phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And I only had so much time with them. And I actually had to set a timer because I get carried away interviewing
no
my
kidding.
Favorite.
Yeah. You have an hour. You have an hour here so we can fully explore these things. Well, now, when you say conspiracy theories, because we, you know, I make a very clear distinction between real problems and conspiracy theories, or what we call now ongoing investigations. And so, and we have callers on this, and I have a reporter that's very into this kind of stuff, you know, and so to me, you know, reality. The COVID shot was completely unnecessary, and they sold it to make billions of dollars. They created fear. They created lockdowns to scare the hell out of people. The deaths were way overreported, and we had early treatments which would have cured it for, you know, pennies on the multiple thousands of dollars they spent. That's real. Conspiracy theory is all our lawyers are registered in England. You know, you've got a secret account in the Treasury. You know, the United States is a corporation, not a country. And I just laugh at this stuff. It's so funny. But people blend the two. They can't see the line between them. They think they'll buy the COVID stuff. They know that the climate change stuff is nonsense. But then they go and tell me that if your birth certificate is capital letters, you've got a secret Treasury account, and Donald Trump's going to take over the country with the military. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is utter nonsense. Uh-huh. So do you find that same thing? Do you have where do you draw the line in terms of health? Are you getting health conspiracies that are total wacko theories? Or do you get when you say in the know, what are we talking about? Give me some theories and then I'll be able to.
Hold that question. Let me hold that question. Ask me that again so I don't forget it. But so I choose not to give like kind of where I stand on it because, you know, I encompass it all, as you know, on my podcast. That's what I do as a podcaster, as a quote unquote truther. I put it all out there, all of it. Uh-huh. And then I let
So you're objective. Discern. You're trying to be objective.
I let people discern what they want to believe, what they don't. I'm not going to put my stance on anybody else. But getting into this as a
the opposite. I want my stance on everything.
But again, as a podcaster that I've been doing this for almost 3 years now on Rumble, I bring all the information. Some of it I believe in, some of it I don't, some of it, and I like. I'm circling back to the original question. I like the fact that I put it all out there. So if I'm wrong in what I think, if I have a stance and I'm totally wrong, then at least I know if something happens that I was like, oh, crap, I didn't think that was real or wow. You know, I've been exposed to every aspect of it, just like you. I've been exposed to it all.
Okay.
So if my thought process isn't correct, then I can be shocked, but it's not like I haven't heard the information or been made aware as, hey, this could be a strong possibility versus some normies out there who are so closed-minded that they don't listen to any of it, you know? So I think being exposed to all of the possibilities out there, you know, whether it's aliens, whether it's the military taking over, whether it's devolution, whether it's the COVID thing, whatever it is, putting it all out there as possibilities as a podcaster, reporting it all and letting individual people make their own decisions and their own conclusions. Because I would never force my beliefs or my opinions or what I think is going to happen onto anyone else because I may be right and I may be wrong. So that's my point is that a lot of these pastors and a lot of these, I call them patriot pastors because they're really taking the stance.
That's a good term. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. I know what you mean.
They're taking a stance for what's going on. They have exposed, most of them have by choice exposed themselves to all of it. just like I was just saying, so that, you know, they are aware, not only what, because some of them have different biblical views, and that's cool, that's okay. Some of them have different worldly views as to, again, what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, all the things, but they've exposed themselves to it all, you know, and so I think that that's great, especially when you're interviewing somebody, they can have a I don't like using the word intelligent either. Nobody is versed in everything. But they can have a knowledgeable conversation because they've been made aware of ABCD.
Oh, we do that. So, we do that all the time here with the experts that we have on. We just had Gregory Wrightstone. He knows more about climate geology than I'll ever know. But I know enough to ask him good questions. And that goes for Derek with economics, and it goes for Jonathan with legal, and all the other hosts, reporters we have, you with wellness. I mean, I know enough about these things to be able to do that. But I am not objective, and we are not journalists, you know, at least I'm not. You know, I'm an advocate. So I definitely take a point of view and a position. Now, people can disagree with my position. I've got no problem with that at all. In fact, we have our Socialist Progressive Report, the West Coast Progressive Reporter, Bianca Moncrieg. We disagree on just about everything. Well, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a fascinating report.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
My mind's running. I have so many things to talk about. So let me give you the rundown. I'll give you just a little tiny bit of an excerpt, not an excerpt, but the people who I spoke to. And then, you know, if your listeners are interested, you know, they can always log into my podcast on Rumble if they want to hear, you know, any of the information and whatnot. So Pastor Greg Locke was there.
Not familiar.
I have interviewed him multiple times. I did speak with him, and he gave me out his free book and all that kind of good stuff. I didn't have the chance to interview with him because he was talking to so many people and whatnot, and his wife was there. I got to speak with him, and I interviewed Pastor Jason Bogg. B-O-G-G, and if my memory serves me correctly, he was, I want to say West Virginia. I have all this stuff written down, so I'm just going off of memory at this moment. I spoke to Dean Odle. Dean Odle is amazing, absolutely amazing. He is from Alabama, and so my ex-in-laws live in Alabama, and so I am strongly considering going to check him out and talking with him, and he is one that I am super excited about interviewing. One was Trey Smith, which was really an amazing interview. And
see, I don't know any of these people. This is where I was curious, because I don't know any of these folks. So what's their, do they have like an overall theme? Are they part of an umbrella group? What message are they trying to get out?
A lot of the conference was about deliverance and deliverance ministries.
Okay. We covered
that's what
Wendy. We actually had a couple of deliverance ministers. We had a couple of deliverance ministers actually on the show last Thursday. Yeah, when you were off at the conference.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was really, really good. So all those things. And then let's see, what else? So I want to make sure to let your viewers know this, and then I'll get on to another topic. Let me go answer your question first. Go back to your question that you asked me.
Oh, conspiracy versus real theories. And by the way, we have listeners, not viewers. Just a little boy. You have viewers.
Yes, I know.
We have listeners.
I know.
I know, it's a habit. I'm just teasing. Oh, don't be sorry. No, I just think it's funny. But anyway, so again, there's a line between a real conspiracy to do evil. In other words, the whole government COVID protocols where, and I have a lot of, you know, people I know that had their kids die, their parents die, you know, this is some serious. I lost two friends to COVID, both, you know, one who created our website, the other who was our regular, you know, reporter. And so that's very real. What I talk about when I talk about the fake, you know, the over the line, the weird conspiracy stuff, U.S. is a corporation. And I proved that. I actually, you know, I actually showed the person the law that says that when they say the federal government is a corporation, that's just the definition. So in other words, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is a federally chartered company. That's what the law means. It doesn't mean the entire United States is a company that's owned by somebody else. And yet that's what they interpret. So that's nonsense. And it's easily disproven. But in terms of health and things, you know, what's real, you know, what are things that they're pushing? It's like, here's an idea. Like the old FDA requirements, Food and Drug Administration requirements, you know, no cholesterol, no fat. And then we know these things are good for us now. No eggs, you know, eat lots of carbohydrates and stuff like that. And we now know it's exactly the opposite is true. So that was a real conspiracy,
right?
To tell people the wrong stuff. You know, don't eat butter, eat margarine, which is basically plastic, you know, one molecule away. So in the health world, what are the big conspiracies?
Oh gosh, there's a million to go down.
Okay, we'll take them. You know, well, in other words, in terms of the conference,
let's
going
table
on.
That and let's come around to it if we have time, because I've got some other things
do it another week. We'll pick it up another time. Just make a note.
Well, don't forget. Yeah. Remind me so I can be prepared.
Every time you're on, I'll probably think of it. I don't think it's going to be hard to remember.
Ah.
Yeah. So tell me what you want to talk about, and then let's because you know, mine is, this is ADHD radio for those that haven't noticed. So yeah, topics are very are you know, optional. Anyway, your turn.
Yeah. So, and I'm just digging into all this, but it's been something you and I have talked about, and I've really been digging hard into it. But I will tell everyone, I want to give everybody this information, if you don't mind. So,
I don't mind.
You know, today we do CJ's Wellness Watch.
Mm-hmm.
I am in the process of creating a Wellness Watch website. Mm-hmm. And it is created. It is not completed. It is
right.
A shell, okay? But mm-hmm. for such a time as this, there are things on there that you can go to and look at, et cetera, et cetera. I'll give everybody the site. Wellnesswatch.gethealthy.store. Wellnesswatch.gethealthy.
Yeah, you should send me some stuff. Send me the website so I can post it in our Life and Health. Well, you should do that anyway. If you're not a member of our Action Radio Life and Health coaching page, because that way you can just post it yourself. And so that'll be handy. Yeah, so just to let folks know, part of the deal, if you're a reporter on my show and you have stuff you're doing, you get to make all kinds of plugs for
it. Well, you know
because
what?
I figure that's a fair
deal. I've got access
to
my business partner. I've got access to Facebook now. So you'll just have to know it's me. It comes up as my friend. So I can say, hey, this is CJ. Don't think I'm like a hacker or anything. So I do have.
Yeah, send me a friend request.
I
forgot you were. Yeah. Okay, good.
So I can get on there. You and I'll get connected on there later.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I forgot you weren't on there, but I could always post it for you, the website. But yeah, you should be on.
Yeah, I'll get on it. I'll get on it through her account because we're working together.
Okay.
So
you can bring her on sometime.
Site,
bring her on the show. Bring your partner on the show sometime.
I can do that.
That'd be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So that site, the tabs on it right now, drop-down stuff for supplementation, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Judy Mikovits and I are actually partnering together on some different things. I should probably be talking with her today. We're going to do a book club.
Wow.
All kinds of stuff.
Well, Judy's one of our favorite people, as you know. She's been on the show about 30 times.
Yeah.
She did our World's Greatest Doctors panel. She was on most of the weeks. We did 18 weeks of that in a row, and she probably was on, you know, 12 of them or more. She's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway,
so that site, I have two bundles on there. One of the bundles is for spike protein. It's very similar. Dr. Judy helped me with that. So I've got
why? This is critical.
Huh?
This is critical for wellness. Why spike proteins? You should explain why that is so important for people to get rid of those things.
Well, I want to go on to the next thing, but I know you guys have done a lot on this.
Oh. Okay, fine.
It's something that we have to keep addressing. It's going to be an ongoing thing. And again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know the longevity. I don't know the details. I just mm-hmm. know that initially when all of this crap went down, right,
mm-hmm.
it was a hot topic, and it is real. You know, again, the longevity, the severity, the wearing, I don't have those answers, but the bundle that was put together addresses a lot of deficiencies, a lot of things that people are lacking just to help their body in general to fight off different things at more of a cellular level, which leads me into another topic. So there is the bundle for that. And then if you think about all of the conversations that's been happening in regards to October 4th, October the 11th, the EAS.
Yeah, what is this big deal? Wendy talked about that the other day too. It strikes me very much Y2K. You know, in other words, everybody got panicked over nothing. I don't like the idea that the government's going to shut everybody's phone off for a minute or turn some big warning that they are. I think it's just a test of the command control communication, you know, C3, right? Command control and communications, that they're trying to coordinate the ability to basically regulate everybody's information system, all the computers, all the phones. That in itself is dangerous enough.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was just explaining to my daughter last night. I'm trying to get her to understand the reality of it. So my point is, on that site that I just gave you, on my site, I actually put together an EMS bundle. You don't have to buy all the things. You can buy one thing. You can buy two things. You can go on to that category. But for such a time as this, because this is coming up, and we've heard of October 4th and possibly October the 11th and all the things. So I put together an EMF bundle on there. And again, the majority of things that you will find on my site right now are things that, that you know, I've collaborated with Dr. Judy on, and I'm actually getting ready to bring another line to all of their sites, which will be the next thing I talk about. But, so you can go there and check that out. I do think that there is going to be something that's going to happen on October the 4th. And, you know, we've heard of so much fear-mongering. The problem is we don't know what's real and what's not. We just don't. We can speculate all that we want. We can use the knowledge that we have. But I have zero concrete evidence of what's real, what's not real, what's going to happen. We hear all these things. So I feel like being over-prepared versus under-prepared is better.
Okay.
You know, I even do that, you know, on a daily basis in my car. You should see the trunk of my car. I have, like, this emergency thing, you know, in my van. And it's like I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So, you know, to have EMS stuff and protecting, we know they're going to do something. I mean,
EMF.
That's a fact.
What's that stand for?
Well, the EMF protectors for radiation, like the things on your home, the things on your phone, the electronic currents and all that up. If they set off an EAS, emergency alert system, you know, we've heard that there is.
Oh, EMS. It's not coming through as an S clearly. Maybe it's a phone connection. We got to get you a head. You should be broadcasting on a microphone. That would be a lot clearer. So EMS.
You can't hear me very well.
It's just certain letters. Like, yeah, it's not like EMF as opposed to EMS. So that'd be Echo Mike Sierra. Yeah. Okay. Just curious. Well, the reason I want to hold you up just for a second, because the reason I was talking about spike proteins is we do a lot of talking here about, you know, vaccine injury recovery. I mean, our Action Radio vaccine page, which is private, is dedicated to that. You know, so Dr. Judy's products and various things like that to get people. And I heard from Pierre Corey that fasting is a great way to reduce some of the more dangerous symptoms of the COVID shots. You know, so those are things that are critical. So I want to relate it to things that we're talking about. This is why I jump in here a little bit here. But this is what the spike protein, you know, that's the dangerous part of the COVID shot. That's the part that lingers around. That's the part I think that causes the blood clots and destroys your immune system and does all the nasty things. And that's engineered in there. So why would they engineer something that goes directly against what they say this thing does? Well, to sell more of it and make people sick. You know, so they'll sell more pharmaceuticals. You know, it's a marketing device to sell. It's like, you know, why put salt in popcorn? Well, so you can sell more drinks. You know, it's a marketing device. And so this is critical for folks to understand, I think, but this is why I like to, you know, for each product that you're talking about, there's a reason, and I want to kind of get the reason behind so that people understand what it's all about. Anyway, back to you.
No, you're right. And like I said, I think that's been, you know, a hot topic that we've been talking about for two or three 3 years, and I just think that it's something that people need to continually stay on top of. Again, mm-hmm. going back to what I was saying is we don't know what is fear, what isn't fear. So to me, it's always better to be proactive than underactive. That's just the way I look at it. You know,
makes sense.
You know, so that's kind of where I stand on it all. But if people go to my website now, that is, like I said, there'll be a lot more coming, and I'm putting pictures up and all that stuff. But there is a website now. You can find those two bundles if you're interested in, which is the spike protein bundle and the other bundle that will have different things for radiation and stuff like that that you can get for your home or on your phone or whatever. And I know a lot of people are really wanting those things with the fact that we have these potential.
Well, let's talk about radiation. Let's talk about radiation for a minute. So what kind of we're talking about Wi-Fi radiation, electromagnetic radiation, microwave from the microwave oven. What are we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about basically a lot of the 5G radiation, which
okay.
we really can't, but we're talking mostly about our phones and the 5Gs. And some of our phones are still 4G, all that kind of good stuff. But I'm talking about that type of radiation that people, I mean, you can't avoid it. We all use our phones. I mean, most people don't even have a landline.
Well,
some people do something.
Let's talk about that for a minute because it's kind of interesting. A friend of mine who was in public relations for high-tech stuff back in the Bay Area, we kind of lost touch because she didn't like the fact that I was a Trump supporter, which is too bad. But anyway, brilliant woman. And told me about the radiation from cell phones. And this was back when they first came out. So maybe late 80s. I don't know how long we've had cell phones, but I imagine they had a lot more radiation in those days. And she told me, she said, don't ever put it up to your head. You know, use the earbuds, or is what I do. I just have a stack of books and I use the speaker. So it never touches my head. In fact, now it's about 3 feet away. So it's not perfect, but but the radiation, you know, 3 feet away from me, I can at least watch it when it lights up compared to, you know, in my back pocket is, you know, it's infinitely greater radiation if it's sitting in my back pocket. You know, people are getting butt cancer on their phones, you know, or if it's in their chest pocket, they're getting, you know, chest cancers, lung cancers and things from these cell phones. This is huge.
It is huge. I try to tell my daughter that all the time. Don't carry your phone in your back pocket. And, you know, everybody puts it in their jean back pocket or your shorts. I'm like, you have 10,000 crossbody bags or a purse, at least put it in a purse or something. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Don't they sit on their phones if it's in your back pocket all the time? How do you avoid sitting on it?
Exactly. So,
butt cancer. Tell us you get cancer of the butt. If you tell us you get
you
cancer
know what,
of the butt, they won't be carrying in their back pocket. Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
You need to get one of those ferret bags.
I just got
especially
one.
For your, have you ever heard of those?
Is that like a ferret age?
Yeah,
what is it?
Yeah, I have.
Well, the ferret bag is the bags. Like, for instance, you got those keys. But you got a proximity auto key that you have in your pocket. You just push a button once you. Well, people can drive down your neighborhood and pick that code off while you sleep and steal your car. So if you keep your car, even your phone, in a ferret bag, and they're not that expensive, some of them $15, and that protects you from that type of a detection.
Is it lead lined or what's it made of?
It's made of some sort of material. It kind of reminds you of the same principle people used to have with the film bags when they go to the airport and they put the film.
I remember that. I used to have one of those lead-lined bags. Yeah, I used to have it back when we had film cameras.
Bags.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they designed like wallets you can put your phone in. Yeah.
I just bought some for myself and my daughter. I got to get her to use them. And like I said, I think everybody over the past couple of weeks, I mean this week, has had a heightened awareness because of all the potential things that they're going to do October 4th, 11th. And that's why I bring this subject up is that I think, you know, we don't know. Is this going to be a real thing? Is this a scare tactic? Is whatever. But being prepared, so buying those things on the back of your phone. And, you know, even prior to this and after all this, you know, I've just recently, I don't have a landline. And I don't have family here. So I'm always used to, I mean, it's just habit, right, of putting my phone on my nightstand. Because if there's an emergency, like I don't want to put my phone downstairs and have somebody break into my house or something. Like how the heck am I going to get my phone? So, you know, it's almost like, for me, I feel like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I want to make sure I have it easy accessible. If something happens to one of my parents that night, I want to make sure something, you know, the phone rings and I hear it, you know, and if I have to grab my phone real quick and call 911, I don't want to have to go digging under, you know, go into my closet and go in a safe deposit. You know what I mean? It's like, how much is overkill? No pun intended. I mean, you just, I don't know. So the ferret bags are really good. I have been at night keeping my phone on, and I have actually been putting it in my nightstand drawer, in the drawer at night. And so, you know, I think, you know, there's only so much you can do. It's almost like going back to that statement, okay, I'm not going to go ride my bike because I could get hit by a car today. Well, I'm going to still go ride my bike. You know?
Right.
So, but to be as proactive as possible, taking those little steps without driving yourself crazy, that's a fine line. It's a fine line. So the bundle that I have on my website has some of that stuff in it because people are wanting that sort of stuff now to prepare for the potential of what's coming or nothing that's coming. But
Let's talk about this. What do they think is coming? Because Wendy has one view of it, but so who's behind it? Is this a FEMA, you know, Federal Emergency Management Agency operation? What do they say they're doing, and what do you think they're trying to do? Because a lot of people are concerned about this.
The scuttlebutt, as I'm sure you've heard from like TikTok videos and all the information that's out there, is that an emergency alert system is going to be set off on the 4th. Between 2 and 4 or something like that. So people in the movement are saying, make sure you turn your phone off, put your phone in a ferret bag, go away from, you know, your phones. You can't get away from 5G or go hiking, go to the beach, go somewhere. Get away from your phone because we don't know if an EAS goes off what they are trying to do. Is it going to be something that's going to elicit a virus? Seems impossible. Is it going to be something that's going to elicit something in the vaccinated or people that have the Magellans in them? I mean, we don't, you know.
Okay,
again,
well, let's talk about phones. What is a phone? A phone is it's an electromagnetic device. It emits, you know, radiation. It carries a radio. It's basically a radio transmitter, right? It receives, you know, information. It transmits information. Just like it's a radio, you know, just except there's no cords to it. So it's a self-contained radio. It's got a battery. It's electrically powered. It's got a charging capability. But in reality, what can it really do? You know, it cannot be turned into a laser. You know, it can't be turned into a radiation device. It can't be turned into an explosive device, as far as I know. So what is the danger from a phone?
Well...
No, again, this is the line between conspiracy and reality. You know, where the logic and reason filter. Okay, so if they said that these things are going to come through a phone cannot spread a virus because a phone has there's nothing biological in a phone other than what you've touched it. You know, so it can't do that.
Right.
It's not a weapon. It doesn't have a weapon system unless you've attached a taser to it, but that's external. But the phone itself cannot emit an electrical charge that can be used for defense or offense. So that's not a problem. The battery isn't big enough to do anything nasty, so that's not a problem. So what can it do other than turn on, turn off? They can strip all your information, maybe. I mean, that's possible. They can, you know, but most of them, mine's on my computer anyway. You know, so what can it do? What are these people afraid of that the phone can do to them on October 4th at 2 p.m.? What are they worried about?
I think people are worried more about the intense 5G radiation and the potential harm that it could do to one's body, anybody, you know.
Okay, but that happens all the time anyway. Your phone is always emitting radiation. This is why I never leave it close to me. And if I carry it in a pocket, on the rare times I carry it in a pocket, it's either off, but it's always on the outside of my wallet. So I get that extra inch of distance. That distance is huge. It's not touching. When a phone's touching you, you know, or if you keep it an inch away from you, that's a huge reduction. It's like a 95-98% reduction in radiation by just being an inch away from you. It's only really bad the closer it is to you. If it touches your brain, you got a problem. But if you talk on a phone like I do, sitting on a stack of books where it's about a foot away from my head, you know, I mean, it may not sound the best, but I'm not getting radiation either because there's a lot more distance. So what are the, just, but you see what I'm getting at though? Yeah. So maybe the anxiety, maybe the real goal is the anxiety and the fear. You know, fear is what drove COVID shots. People got COVID shots because they were scared of dying. They didn't investigate whether the damn thing worked or not. They didn't investigate alternative treatments that they wouldn't have, which would have, and the whole, our whole point from February of 2020 was that ivermectin, well, you know about ivermectin, but hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, stop COVID. There is no pandemic. We were saying that since February. So we had knowledge. So we were never afraid. So this is what I'm trying to do now. If we have knowledge of what our phone does, then there's really not a lot to be afraid of from the phone. Now, there's a lot to be afraid of from the government policy and the sinister, evil people that want to control everything. So is the intent, and this is why I haven't put a lot of stock in this and I haven't talked about it a lot, except when it comes up on the show, but is the intent to generate fear for the sake of generating fear for some other reason?
Yeah.
And how does that affect your immune system?
Good question.
Destroys it, doesn't it? Doesn't fear destroy your immune system?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe that's, if the immune system's destroyed, where are people going to turn, you know, for help? Big pharma, right? Okay. So maybe October 4th has nothing to do with phones and has everything to do with creating fear.
Maybe. That's what I'm saying. Maybe not.
Well,
that's what
I'm asking. That's what I'm asking the question.
Yeah, it could, very well could.
Did that come up in your conferences?
That particular subject, no, it has not.
It should have.
No, it did not. Nope.
So how come? So given that, now we just went through a very logical, now I'm not a scientist, I'm not an engineer, okay? I'm not an electrical engineer. I don't have, you know, clairvoyant knowledge of cell phones. But doesn't that make sense, what we
it
just
does.
Went through? Okay.
It does.
So then, yeah. So here's the thing. So we talk about a lot about what's not in the news. So what's important, what is in the news is important, but what's more important is what's not in the news. That's not in the news.
Mm-hmm.
No one's talking about October 4th as a propagandistic, fear-based thing just to scare people again. And once they're scared, I believe the government scares you to make you susceptible to another message. You know, what if a new COVID shot's rolled out October 5th?
Right.
To cure the radiation. Right. So what if there's a radiation vaccine? What if there's a, you know, some drug to prevent, you know, excessive phone radiation? I mean, I don't know. I'm just wildly speculating here. But is there effort to, you know, but this would, you know, if you're sinister, if you're in the Dr. Fascist and the health Nazi, you know, government corporate fascist, you know, medical conspiracy to kill a million people. And that was real, by the way. Why wouldn't you scare people again with phones? Everybody's got one.
See,
oh no.
Again, you have a point, which is what I was saying. You have to use your discernment and the problem is, I'm gonna say this again, you know, it's my perspective. We can only go by our common sense knowledge, what is real and what isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
Until we know. You know, so
may the fourth be with you, not against
right.
you. Sorry, I'm teasing.
Right. So,
do you think anything's going to happen? I'm skeptical. I think it's
me
a fear
too.
Test. Yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'd like to mention, and we can pick this subject up, you know, another time. But just for some people to think about. So the new. It's new to it's not really new to me, but it's something that I'm digging into more because new supplementation that's natural that I am providing to my clients right now is I have been digging into epigenetics. Has anybody
What's that?
Heard of that? You've probably heard of that,
nope.
right?
Nope.
So epigenetics.
You might have told me before.
It's a study of changes in the cell functions that do not involve alteration in the DNA sequence. So it's factors such as DNA methylation rather than by change in the sequence of base pairs in the DNA itself. So it's not going to change the DNA itself, but it changes the methylation, which means the health of the cells. And so I just recently, over the past, I would say, 4 weeks, became knowledgeable of some all-natural supplementation from God's earth that is actually found in, if people don't know what the PDR is, it's the physician's desk reference, which when you go to an MD or a doctor and they prescribe you a pharmaceutical drug, that's like their holy grail Bible, where they look up drugs to give you, or you can go to a PDR online if you're taking whatever drug, right? And you can go look it up, specifically what's in it, side effects, what's supposed to do, all the things. So these new to me, probably been around, I would say, not even a year, epigenetic herbaceuticals. Herbaceuticals are actually in the PDR, the physician's desk reference. And so to a lot of wellness professionals and to a lot of people who are taking XYZ for different challenges, health challenges, and medical professionals and whatnot, this is a really, really big deal. So I've been doing a lot of digging into that, and I'm actually on board with all of those supplementations, and that's been something that I have been encouraging my clients and individuals to consume on a daily basis. I'm consuming them. A lot of it has to do with detoxifying metals in the body and using natural earth substances and liposomal. I'm actually partnering with, I'm not going to drop any names, but with several hundreds of the doctors in the Patriot Movement to use this epigenetic line as something that we can offer to the everyday person as a part of or using it as their everyday supplement protocol. So I'm pretty excited about that and the technology behind it. That's something that is going to be exciting moving forward.
Well, I'd say it's going to be exciting is learning about this coalition that's forming among patriots and doctors. You know, this whole patriot doctor movement is quite interesting because everybody knows how many doctors were threatened to have the license pull for simply saving lives, you know, prescribing hydroxychloroquine, and it will have your license taken away, but killing somebody with remdesivir, you know, gets you a bonus. It's a very strange world in medicine right now. They've actually reversed where killing is good and saving is bad. Killing is good if it makes you lots of money. I mean, it's really twisted. I mean, it's barbaric, you know, what's happening. So this is a good thing. Yeah. But I'd be curious, you know, as this goes forward more and more to find out about it. But this whole, you know, like I say, what's going on, I think people are purposely being scared and everybody's panicking about it. But there's a certain thing about fascination that people want to panic. You know, I was talking to Gregory Wrightson about this earlier, about, you know, why these globalist stooges are, you know, creating such panic for no reason when the earth is doing just fine. And there's a certain percentage of people that they want to believe the worst. They want to believe that global warming is horrible. We're all going to die in, you know, 3 years, 4 years, 2 years, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It's not happening. They want to believe that the COVID shot is real because COVID is such a dangerous thing. Oh, my God, we can't have that. Government will save us. You know, they want to believe that October 4th is going to be the end of the world. You know, sin or repent, you know, or the world will end. You know, I mean, people want to believe. That's an interesting psychological thing that we should look into also. The wanting to believe the worst. And I don't know why they do it.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. But let's circle back. The point that you're making is very, very, very valid, and I'm in total agreement with you. But think about this. The event that was driven with COVID and vaccines, let's just use the word vaccine. Let's utilize that word for purpose of demonstration, okay? This has heightened the awareness, even, you know, child vaccines from, you know, when I was a little girl. This has drawn more attention to the topic, to the concern, to all the things, right? So is this potential false flag, I'll use, from the conspiracy world, is this true event, lag event, or whatever, to wake more people up and draw heightened awareness to radiation, to 5G, to all the different things? Could that be?
See, but that's,
yes,
but,
it could.
But there's the 5G is real. 5G is real. Phone radiation is real. October 4th may not be real. But again, there's the logic and filter. Logic and reason filter. What is real based on what we know? We know the phones emit radiation. We know that they're not, space-based laser weapons.
No, 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 no. I get it. But the whole radiation thing, that a lot of people in the natural wellness community have been talking about for a long time, it's one of those things we take advantage of or poo-poo. Like my daughter, when I hound her about radiation from her phone and stuff, she doesn't give a rat's ass rear end.
No, because she's always grown up with phones. Nothing's happened to her personally. And she doesn't have any friends to have any problems. But, wait 20 years.
Wait 20 years. Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. Is this to bring heightened awareness of, hey, it may not be affecting you now, but in 20 years from now, from carrying your phone in your back pocket, could you have ovarian cancer? Could you this? And, I'm one to talk because, I'm very much aware and I take as many precautions as I can. Again, for emergency purposes, I sleep with my phone by my bed because I don't have a landline. And it's a safety thing for me, or that's the excuse I use. But that's a real thing. If somebody breaks into my house, again, I don't want to have to go digging or going somewhere and trying to turn on my phone, wait until it powers up to call 911.
I recommend a series of weapons, knives, guns, swords, tasers, stun guns, and you don't have to mention that stuff on the air, but I'm just saying that a preponderance of weapons can put you in a much better position. Yeah. And a phone. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to go soon. We're kind of in overtime now. So just to let you know, we're going to be summing up here in a bit. This has been interesting.
Okay. Well, I will look forward then to talking with you next week. And again, if anybody wants to reach me or wants to go to that website that I gave you, that would be great. You can reach me at H2O Wellness Network. That's H2O Wellness Network at gmail.com. And then wellnesswatch.gethealthy.store. And again, please just keep in mind that website is, in building mode, but there is stuff there, and you will see the logo that says the Wellness Watch on there.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Have a blessed day, Greg.
Yeah, blessed day, too. Thank you. And we'll be talking off the air about all kinds of stuff, so I appreciate it.
See you soon.
All right. Take care, CJ.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Oh, boy, another great show. This was fun. And so we had just a whole variety of different people. Again, Pianchi was really great to spend a lot of time with me today on the show, Gregory Wrightstone and then CJ. And so, so podcasts will be out in about, just a little bit. They'll be about 10:15 standard time. About 50 minutes of the show ends is when the podcast is ready. Please share it. Share all the stuff that we do here. And we have a variety of bills that need sharing too. So there's a lot of things that need doing. Anyway, back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. And so we have a couple of different guests. I'll have to check on them. I know one's coming. We've got the Women's Firearm Academy, which is run by a dude, which is kind of John DeMonico. So he'll be on tomorrow at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock. No, he'll be at 9 o'clock Central Time. I have another guest I have to talk to you about 8 o'clock. I just got to confirm that, and then I'll be naming names at that point. And then our usual folks in the beginning, Tara D with the Santa Rosa Animal County Animal Shelter. Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter Report. There we go. I'm tired. It's the end of the show. And Derek Park with our financial report. And then we have a couple of hours of hopefully gun stuff. It's going to be kind of fun. We haven't talked about that for a while. So very busy time. Again, go over to our website, writeyourlaws.com. Check out the bills. Click legislation, click all proposed laws, and that's where you find the stuff that's pretty critical. All right, let's see if I can find my next thing I want to click on here. It's been great. So again, tomorrow, Friday, 7 a.m. Central Time, hop in here and we will do it all again.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener. And help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. We'll be right back.